OK, well, thank you very much for joining us. Tony Devenish, Conservative London Assembly Member for Kensington and Chelsea. That's the borough where, of course, that fire, Grenfell Tower fire, has taken place. Thank you very much to him. Thank you to all my guests. I know we're going to continue the coverage after the news at 1 o'clock with John Holmes, who's just joined me in the studio. Oh, just a horrific scene.
Absolutely awful, yes. Like many people, I woke up to that this morning and you're just staring fairly transfixed at those images that are coming out, because we don't see that. I mean, that kind of...
Well, when I saw the first words, people talking about a towering inferno, we are prone in the media to exaggerate, but that is simply no exaggeration.
Yeah, exactly what
overnight.
It is. Yeah. So you're right, we are dropping what we normally do, of course, and bringing you continued coverage. We've got people on the scene down there, and we'll be keeping you up to date with it all as it unfolds as we go along through
Indeed.
The afternoon.
I know the London Mayor Sadiq Khan has just arrived on the scene, so we'll bring you up to date on what he's had to say as well. John Holmes will be with you throughout the afternoon, then of course Sam Delaney. I'll be back with you at 10 o'clock tomorrow morning, and let's just keep everything across that we get some good news today, that some of those people who are unaccounted for, who are missing, will be found safe and sound. This is Talk Radio. Do stay tuned.
Talk Radio.
Join the Talk Nation.
Dial up and Talk Radio.
We'll get you talking.
Stand up to cancer on Talk Radio. Stand up, raise cash, take cancer out. Luckily, we're more equipped than ever to defy it. It's time to rise up against cancer.
Calling all rebels! Talk Radio have teamed up with Stand Up to Cancer, and together we're raising funds and raising the roof in a series of fearless challenges.
From a close shave with hair-raising results...
to making serious dough from a ballsy bake-off.
Get inspired, join the rebellion, and help bring in stacks of cash for game-changing cancer treatments.
100% of the money raised go straight to those badass science boffins who save lives.
Stand up to cancer on Talk Radio. Rebels, you now have a cause. Search Stand Up to Cancer to sign up.
There are over 15,000 products in the new Screwfix catalogue. Surprising how easy it is to pick up, really. The new Screwfix catalogue, packed with tools, accessories and loads of great trade deals. Pick up your free copy from any of our 520 stores nationwide. Screwfix, here when you need us.
My thing, minimalism. I like to pretend I'm living in a Scandinavian furniture catalogue. I like any colour, as long as it's white. Absolute white, white cotton, white mist. The only threesome I want. So when I got a red coffee machine for my birthday, it was never going to work. So sadly, it had to go.
With millions of buyers ready and waiting, there's no better place to sell your things than eBay. eBay. Find your thing.
The American Golf trade-in continues. Save, trade and upgrade your old clubs for brand new ones. Visit for a free valuation today. Terms and conditions apply.
Tradesmen, here's the plan. Get to the rendezvous, you contact the foreman, will show you the ropes and the tools. Get into your job and get out. You'll be sipping margaritas on the beach before you know it. But first, prove you're a guy they can trust. Show them your direct line public liability policy, which has been conveniently wired to your phone. And tell them you're with the Wolf. Let's get to work.
Get instant confirmation of your cover sent straight to your smartphone. Can your insurance do that? Search Direct Line Public Liability Insurance. Valid email address required. Underwritten by UK Insurance Limited.
Across the UK, online and on DAB.
Talk Radio.
We have ways of making you talk.
Talk Radio.
It's exactly 1 o'clock. Good afternoon. You're listening to Talk Radio. I'm John Holmes. Robin's got the latest news now.
Thank you very much, John. Coming up, 6 dead in tower block blaze.
In my 29 years of being a firefighter, I have never, ever seen anything of this scale.
And questions are being asked about how it took hold so quickly.
How could this happen? How could something like this happen? There's 125 families in there.
Talk Radio.
At least 6 people have died in a huge fire at a tower block in West London, and officials say the death toll is expected to rise. The fire brigade says they're still working to bring the blaze under control at Grenfell Tower in the west of the capital after they were called out last night.
We rescued large numbers of people from inside the building very early on across a range of different floors. I've spoken to crews who've been up as far as the 19th and 20th floor. So we've got crews continuing to work very hard in there at the moment. We are making steady progress in going through the whole building.
That's London's Fire Commissioner Danny Cotton. The blaze ripped through almost all of the building's 24 floors. 74 people are currently in hospital, 20 of them in a critical condition. Ahmed Chelad has family who lived on the 21st floor of the building. He spoke to them in the early hours shortly after the fire started, but he hasn't heard anything since.
I said, what did they ask you to do? She said, they asked us to cover the doors with towels. The last thing she said, smoke is coming heavily through the door. into the flat. And that was the last time we heard of her.
The building was refurbished recently with work completed last year. The construction firm responsible for that refurb, Rydon, says it's shocked by what's happened and that all its work met all the required building control, fire regulation and health and safety standards. The cause of the blaze will, of course, be investigated, but several residents reported that one man had said it started in his faulty fridge. Matt Rack, who's from the Fire Brigades Union, says whatever the cause, the way that the fire took hold is very worrying.
It should not be possible for a fire to develop in this way, and there will clearly have to be a major investigation into what has happened here.
We will, of course, bring you the very latest from the scene throughout this afternoon here on Talk Radio. Some other news in brief. Trading at Borough Market has started again. The site has reopened today to shoppers after the terror attack there, during which 8 people were killed. And Diane Abbott has revealed she has type 2 diabetes. The Labour MP says her condition was out of control, and that's why she had to suddenly pull out of election campaigning last week.
Talk Radio National Weather.
Very warm and sunny across England and Wales. A bit cloudier and breezier in Western Scotland and Northern Ireland. Highs today, 28 degrees.
Robin, thank you very much indeed. Robin will be with us throughout the afternoon, bringing us updates, of course, as this horrific story continues to unfold. Tim's got the sport now. And Tim, cricket, I understand, as well.
Yes, certainly. We've got the Champions Trophy semi-final underway at the moment. Pakistan won the toss. They're bowling first against England. A short time ago, England 149 for 5 in the 36 over. There is live ball commentary over on Talk Sport. One of the most eagerly awaited days in the football calendar has arrived, with the release of the Premier League fixtures for the new season. It all starts on Saturday, the 12th of August. Champions Chelsea start their title defence at home to Burnley. They then travel to rivals Tottenham a week later. As for the newly promoted sides, Huddersfield are away at Crystal Palace on the opening day. Brighton and Hove Albion host Manchester City, and Newcastle welcome Tottenham. The first North London derby of the season is on the 18th of November at the Emirates. Manchester rivals City and United face off at Old Trafford on the 9th of December. There's also a Merseyside derby penciled in for the same day at Anfield. And Harry Kane says he hasn't been told by manager Gareth Southgate whether he's getting the England captaincy full-time. The Tottenham striker skipped the side for the second game running in last night's 3-2 friendly defeat to France in Paris, scoring twice. That's the latest sport, powered by TalkSport.
Tim, thank you very much indeed. Tim, keeping up to date with sport throughout the afternoon as well. We are suspending our normal programming, what we ordinarily do in the afternoons for you between 1 and 4 o'clock today, because of this horrific story. Of course, we know that 6 people have died in this fire in a tower block in London. We've got people down there on the scene. We'll be talking to Alex Dibble very shortly, who's been talking to eyewitnesses and bringing you continued coverage of it as the afternoon wears on. Are you listening to Talk Radio? I'm John Holmes.
Talk Radio.
If the phrase PPI claim makes you want to lie down and go to sleep, congratulations, you're perfectly normal. If it fills you full of excitement at the prospect of winning back money for other people, then you probably work at the money hotline. Because we love getting our clients back what they're rightfully owed. Our dedicated team of experts will handle your claim for you and make the whole thing hassle-free. Call us free from your mobile on 87878 or go to moneyhotline.co.uk.
John Holmes on Talk Radio. We'll get you talking.
Yes, it is. Good afternoon. I am John Holmes, and we are, as I say, suspending what we normally bring you during the hours between 1 and 4 o'clock to continue the coverage of this horrific story. What do we know so far? The Met Police have confirmed that 6 people have died. That figure is likely to rise. That's the quote. More than 70 people, I think it's 74 now, treated at 5 London hospitals. There are 20 people in critical care. Many, many people still unaccounted for, as you've been hearing. This was a fire that was reported at Grenfell Tower in Latimer Road in the borough of Kensington and Chelsea in London at just before 5 to 1 this morning. 40 fire engines, various other fire specialist vehicles down there as well. 200 firefighters tackling the blaze. The cause is as yet unknown. Obviously, they need to get the whole thing extinguished, and still we maintain hope that they will be bringing people out alive. But of course, the cause of the fire will be something that is investigated over the coming days. If you have any concerns over people you may be wondering about, then there is a number. This is the Met Police Emergency Casualty Bureau number. It's 0800 0961 233. 0800 0861 2333. Matt Rack is General Secretary of the Fire Brigade Union. He says, regarding that investigation, that a full investigation will need to be undertaken, of course, at the first possible opportunity. And what can be done to prevent such an incident happening again? Now, the question is, of course, is how did this incident even happen, given modern fire regulations? We'll be talking about that among many of the other issues that have come out of this story this afternoon between 1 and 4 o'clock. Those people who we'll be talking to, as well as we'll be doing our best to keep you up to date with this horrific situation. Let's hear some of the statements from the emergency services and what they've been saying so far. First, we'll hear from Danny Cotton, who was mentioned there in the news, of course, the Commissioner of the London Fire Brigade. Danny Cotton is the Commissioner of the London Fire Brigade. I think we can bring you that audio now.
The first crews were on scene in under 6 minutes and found a rapidly developing fire. As you can appreciate from looking at the building now, this has been a very serious and a very complex fire. Our firefighters on scene have been working tirelessly and continue to do so to extinguish the fire and search the building for any remaining people inside. We have had at the height over 200 firefighters and 40 fire engines on scene with a range of specialist officers. We have been working closely with all of our partners to establish what is going on here. We will continue to work closely in the coming hours and days to look at the cause of this fire and to investigate what has happened. We have got a structural engineer who, in conjunction with my urban search and rescue advisor, is monitoring the stability of the building. At the moment, the building continues to be safe for our crews to go and work in. I must say, I want to thank everybody who has been involved in this incident so far. What has been a very difficult time, and send our sincere condolences to everybody involved in this really terrible incident. As you can appreciate, this is a very difficult time. It is still in a dynamic stage of this incident, and it would be wrong for us to speculate around the cause of the fire or anything further at this moment.
That's Danny Cotton. She's the Commissioner of the London Fire Brigade, speaking earlier today, of course. Let's, as you would imagine, all the emergency services are there. Paul Woodrow is the Director of Operation at the London Ambulance Service. Here's what he had to say earlier.
We have now taken over 50 patients to hospitals across London, and clearly our thoughts are with everyone affected by these tragic events. We have over 100 of our medics working hard here in response to this incident, including emergency ambulance crews, advanced paramedics, specialist trauma teams, and our hazardous area response teams. We continue to work closely with our partners from the London Fire Brigade and the Metropolitan Police Service. Our priority is to ensure that patients get the treatment that they need and are conveyed to hospital as quickly as possible. Whilst we continue to manage this ongoing incident, I would like to ask Londoners to only call us in a genuine emergency, and if they could call NHS 111 for any urgent healthcare advice. Thank you.
Paul Woodrow there, he's the Director of Operations at the London Ambulance Service, talking earlier today. That's what the Fire Brigade had to say, that's what the Ambulance Service had to say. Of course, the police are on scene as well. The Met Police Commander is Stuart Cundy. Here's the statement they made earlier.
There are a significant number of police officers here in this locality. I know there is significant disruption, both in terms of road closures and other travel closures. And if you are travelling in this area, please go to the TfL website. But I would urge people to keep away from this immediate vicinity. If you do have any concerns about anybody connected to this awful, awful event, please phone the Casualty Bureau. The number has already gone out, but to repeat it for you here today, it's 0800 0961 233. That's 0800 0961 233. And if you have any concerns, please use that number rather than dialing 999 or 101. If you are a displaced resident, the current reception centre being coordinated by the local authority is at the Rugby Portobello Trust on Walmer Road. The local authority will also be putting out through their press statements as well. As I say, this is a very dynamic situation. It is very early days. As you can see behind us at Grenfell Tower, this is a truly truly shocking fire that has occurred overnight. And my thanks to the colleagues from the LFB for the sterling work that they're doing at this point in time.
That is Stuart Cundy. He's the Met Police Commander, and that is obviously a statement from him earlier today. Let's talk now, widen this the net slightly, I think. Joe Bullock is from the Royal Society for Prevention of Accidents. Good afternoon, Joe.
Hi, John.
Thanks very much for joining us. Much appreciated. This is, I mean, you're the Royal Society for Prevention of Accidents. By their very nature, you can't prevent all accidents if this is what this turns out to be, sadly, can you?
Well, I just want to start by saying that, like others, like all your listeners, we're absolutely horrified by the extent and severity of what's happened here. We've been watching with shock today as this story has unfolded, and our thoughts are with all those who are affected, including obviously the emergency service personnel who are still on site and having to work in an extremely traumatic environments. It's at times like this when we see high profile incidents, and to be honest, we don't recall seeing something of this nature before, but it's at times like this when we receive inquiries from members of the public who are understandably shocked at what they've seen, and they're worried about their own safety and are wondering what steps they can take in their own lives to try to prevent a fire happening where they live. So it's advice for individual members of the public who are getting in touch with us today.
Indeed, and when something like this happened, that is, it's almost a wake-up call to people, isn't it?
Indeed it is, and what I would say today is people who are listening to your coverage are going to be horrified and perhaps are going to be frightened, and we would say, you know, please do take this opportunity just to stop and to think about your safety and about the safety of your family, and if there are any steps that you could take to make your own home safer. So obviously we start with smoke alarms. You know, they're not going to prevent a fire from happening in the first place, but please, if you do not have a smoke alarm in your home or it doesn't work, please do get one that works, preferably one with a 10-year battery. That means the battery's not going to keep running out and you're going to have to replace it, so please do take that opportunity today
and test them regularly as well, of course.
Test them regularly, absolutely, and also give them a dust from time to time. You know, they can collect dust as the months go by, so make sure that they're cleaned, and never, you know, if you do currently have one that has the more temporary batteries, don't be tempted to take out those batteries if the smoke alarm beeps. If you have a smoke alarm that continuously beeps, you think there is something wrong with it, replace it, get a new one, get one with a 10-year battery.
Right, okay, and in terms of where we site these, because obviously this is the incident we are talking about, of course, is a tower block. Now, we don't know yet, of course, and we're not going to speculate because there's no point in doing that, on the fire prevention facilities they had inside there. But is it a case of if you're in a flat or a house, is it a case of getting a smoke alarm in every room? Is it because I know there are obviously certain sites you're supposed to put them, but how many would, you know, maybe a two or three bedroom flat want to have?
Well, the advice is to fit a smoke alarm on each floor of your property. So obviously if you live in a house and it has a downstairs and an upstairs, make sure you have a smoke alarm on both of those floors.
Yeah.
That is the advice. So as you say, we can't speculate at this stage about the terrible event that's unfolding in London, but when you have responsibility for your own property, you know, within the confines of your home, have a smoke alarm on each floor. And as you said earlier, please test them regularly.
Yeah. All right. Listen, Joe, thank you for taking... I know you've had a busy day. Thanks for taking the time to talk to us. Joe Bullock, she's from the Royal Society for Prevention of Accidents. And it is, she's absolutely right. When things like this happen, it is a wake-up call to people. If you haven't got a smoke alarm, you hear adverts. Hey, you hear them on here, for goodness sake, about testing and getting a smoke alarm. But she's absolutely right. You know, frankly, and if you ever thought, that is money well spent. So that's the advice from them, and is the correct advice, of course. Now, as the afternoon goes on, We're going to be bringing you coverage, and as we like to do on this programme, sometimes it's slightly out of the box coverage, where situations get thrown up that we'd like to talk to people about. We'll be bringing you some interesting guests as well, who have plenty to say on this terrible story. Alex Dibble is going to be down at the scene for us. We're going to be talking to him very shortly on Talk Radio in the afternoons. We'll take traffic and travel now, and then come back with that. Good afternoon. It's Talk Radio.
Talk Radio. Digital debate for the UK.
Talk Radio.
We'll get you talking.
Hey, I'm Lee Reedy. This song's about Oasis drinks.
I'm selling out, singing this song. Your liquid loving stops you feeling wrong. I sold my soul to the marketing team. But the money's good and the Oasis drinks are free. Oasis, it's hashtag fresh stuff. Oasis, buy a bottle cause it's just ain't enough.
My thing, minimalism. I like to pretend I'm living in a Scandinavian furniture catalogue. I like any colour, as long as it's white. Absolute white, white cotton, white mist. The only threesome I want. So when I got a red coffee machine for my birthday, it was never going to work. So sadly, it had to go.
With millions of buyers ready and waiting, there's no better place to sell your things than eBay. eBay. Find your thing.
All good things must come to an end, and Matt's beloved work boots have just trod their final step. Time to click and collect from Screwfix. Whatever you need for the job, with Screwfix you can check stock online, then just click and collect in as little as 1 minute from any of our 520 stores nationwide. Screwfix, here when you need us.
So you've been pondering the idea of getting rid of your greys with Just For Men for the first time, and you're curious, is it fast? Easy? Why yes, it's faster and easier than, say, fighting over the remote with your wife. You want the match, she, that blasted singing contest thingy. Take me home. On the flip side, you could have been done getting rid of your grey with Just For Men by now. In about 5 minutes, you're back to your natural hair colour. Hey, your hair looks so good, she might even turn off the telly. Just For Men. Find it in the men's aisle.
There's too much pressure in our lives these days. Like making sure your phone doesn't run out of battery. I'm at 3%. So when it comes to selling your car, try WeBuyAnyCar.com. Our branch staff are there to make life easy. There's no pressure. You can choose to sell or not to sell. Could someone charge me up, quick? To sell your car quickly and easily, enter your reg number now at WeBuyAnyCar.com. Admin fee may apply. For more information, see WeBuyAnyCar.com/info.
Talk Radio, traffic and travel.
North of Hastings, the A28 main road through Westfield is currently closed in both directions. That's because of an accident. Delays are easing on the A3 through Esher in Surrey after earlier southbound problems. The Westway in and out of London is still closed through Notting Hill after the major incident at Grenfell Tower. Hammersmith and City and Circle Line services in the area are disrupted as well. You can now join the southbound M11 at Junction 8 from the A120 after earlier problems, but there's delays on the M6 south in Cheshire towards an accident near Junction 17 for Sandbach. I'm Joanna Adams.
Skeletor got 10% off his AXA home insurance at Money Supermarket, and now he feels like his Havoc staff's a twirling baton. His boots are ballet slippers, like he's got the music inside him, like he's going to live forever. Get 10% off AXA home insurance, another epic deal, exclusively from Money Supermarket. Offer ends July 13th. New customers only when purchasing AXA home insurance through Money Supermarket. Discount excludes certain add-ons. See Money Supermarket for full T's and C's.
Talk Radio. Listen. Phone. Talk.
Talk Radio.
We'll get you talking.
Across the UK, online and on DAB.
John Holmes on Talk Radio. We'll get you talking.
It is Talk Radio in the afternoons. I'm John Holmes. We've suspended what we normally bring you between 1 and 4 o'clock to, continue with coverage of this awful tower block fire that is in London, as many people were waking up this morning to this horrific story. Of course, Alex Dibble was up very early. He's down at the scene now. Hello, Alex.
Hi, John.
Hello. So you were there from very early, Alex. So, I mean, things have moved apace and things keep changing.
Yeah, things keep changing. And where I am at the moment is I'm in Westway Leisure Centre, which is just round the corner from Grenfell Tower Block, which is still ablaze this afternoon. And what's happened now is that the community is rallying round, and it's been an incredible response from people who've brought, supplies, food, water, clothes to various centres, community centres in the vicinity of Grenfell Tower. And here, there is just an incredible array of things that people have brought down to support the victims. So I'm standing by a table which is full of toiletries, there's toothpaste, baby wipes, toilet roll, shower gel, all this sort of thing on the table next to me. Meanwhile, three big guys have just carried a mattress right past me, and another one actually, and they're being laid in the centre of the sports hall itself on the sort of tennis courts. These, I think, will be used for people who require emergency accommodation tonight, people who've managed to escape alive from the fire.
Well, that's it, because clearly the residents do not know where they are spending the night. I mean, that's part of the issue, of course. These are people, as you rightly managed to get out. What do we know about, because it's still, the fire is still in the building. It's not been put out. You know, we are now 12 hours into this fire. And what's the latest from the fire brigade on the progress they're making?
Well, we know that firemen have been inside the building, and we believe that what they've been doing is making their way up through the floors to the very top, 24 stories, Grenfell Tower. And as I said, I'm inside the leisure centre now, but the last time I was looking at the tower block just a few minutes ago, there were still flames coming out from some of the very top floors and smoke still sort of billowing into the sky. But the emergency services have been working flat out to try and get it under control. And if there is anyone still inside, trapped, who could be saved, then that will be their primary priority at this moment.
Yeah, let's hope that they do still get people out of there alive. And in terms of the people you've been speaking to, Alex, I mean, what's the... I hesitate to say what's the mood, because that's obvious, but, what is the feeling amongst the residents and the people in that area at the moment?
I think just complete shock, but also a little bit of anger, I have to say, because there have been warnings about the safety of Grenfell Tower for some time, and residents felt that it was almost an accident waiting to happen. And they've been wanting reassurances and improvements, and they think that a renovation project that took place on the building around 6 months ago now may have actually contributed to the speed and the acceleration of the fire overnight. So, for example, they say that they on the outside of the building was covered in these plastic hoardings,
yeah,
and foam was added just as an aesthetic, really, but that was such flammable material that it actually contributed to the fire. So residents are very angry at what they see as real negligence and something that could have, helped cause a catastrophe. But there is obviously great shock and sadness as well. I've spoken to people who had friends who lived inside the block, and they're just distraught as they hear news that their friends have passed away.
We've got a statement from to whom you refer there, the Grenfell Action Group. Now, their blog has been widely circulated this morning with these warnings, Alex, as you say, within, and these date back to last year. November 2016, they said that only a catastrophic event would expose the issues these residents had. So you're right, this has been going on for some time. We'll bring you their statement very shortly, but... in terms of the, I suppose, the people that have come from all over London, and we'll go back to where you're standing now, it's that sense of resilience, isn't it, and that sense of people just coming together now to help when something dreadful like this happens.
It is quite remarkable, and the people I've spoken to here, residents and neighbours, say that this is a real community area. It's not the type of place where, no one really knows each other. People have lived here, grown up here. They know everyone, and everyone has rallied round. But then, the amount of people who are bringing things, supplies and food and drink and all sorts of other things, they must be coming from miles and miles around, as you say, from other parts of London. And, this sounds silly, but looking at the amount of stuff that's been donated, both at Westway Leisure Centre, where I am, and also at one or two other centres, I almost think that there's more than the number of families who lived in Grenfell Tower block would need. It's that abundant the way people have responded. So it, quite incredible.
Yeah, and in terms of with you talking to people as well, is that, I mean, again, it is only speculation, I realise, but there are certain reports coming through of what may have caused the fire. Is that a faulty fridge has been mentioned? That seems to be what most people on social media are talking about. That hasn't been confirmed. We should be clear on that. But is there a speculation amongst the residents, amongst the people you've been talking to, about what caused this in the first place?
Yes, many people have heard this theory that a faulty fridge could be the cause of it, that the fridge exploded and that then led to the fire. But some people, I have to say, are skeptical of that. And one of the reasons is that on Talk Radio earlier, there was a witness who described, in his words, a line of fire from the bottom of the building all the way to the top. I was shown footage which had been filmed by a local resident as well, which confirmed exactly that. It was almost like, you know, a ruler, a straight line of fire going up one side of the building. And he said that he thought that was because something with a gas pipe had gone wrong, and hence the line of fire was that pipe that ran all the way up the building. Now, that doesn't necessarily preclude an explosion of a fridge. But he thinks that this could be a slight red herring, and that there may have been deeper problems that have actually caused this. But as I say, this is all speculation. We just don't know at this stage.
No, we'll have to wait for that over the coming days. And just on a final point on that cladding that you mentioned as well, because this modern cladding has been linked to fires in tower blocks before, Alex. There was the case in New Year's Eve in Dubai, where I think the investigation suggested that not so much to do with the cause of the fire, but certainly to allow it to spread. But you'd think in this day and age, wouldn't you, that all of that would be fire safety checks, and it was all to do with there weren't fire breaks within that cladding. And it seems that we have a similar situation here.
It seems that way, and residents that I've spoken to have also been sceptical of the motivation of conducting this renovation project in the first place. They say that, you know, the local authorities wanted to demolish there are a number of blocks like Grenfell Tower block around this area.
Yeah.
And they said they wanted to either demolish them or renovate them so they didn't look like tower blocks from the 1970s. And so they didn't knock down Grenfell. They chose to renovate it. But residents have told me that they did so in such a way, by putting this cladding on, that made it ripe for a disaster of this nature. And so they were saying that you look at the other tower blocks that they haven't renovated,
yeah,
they're just brick on the outside. And so if there was a fire in one of those, of course, it would be dreadful, but there's no real way it could spread to the floors up and down in the same way and with the same speed as they say the fire last night at Grenfell Tower block spread.
Alex.
And so that hence part of the reason why there's still very much anger.
All right, Alex, listen, thank you very much indeed. I know you've had a long morning. Alex Dibble for Talk Radio, they're down at the scene of this terrible fire in Grenfell Tower in London, which still is ablaze, as we go into the news and the very latest on it for you with Robin at 1:30.
Talk Radio.
Thank you very much, John. Six people have died in the Grenfell Tower block fire, and officials say they do now expect the death toll to rise. Witnesses have reported desperate scenes there, with people at windows and balconies trying to escape the blaze.
All we could see was the building, like, up in flames, and people screaming, help me, I've got a child, I've got a baby, please help me get out. Torches and blankets being waved.
The lady, she was calling for the help, and then the fire comes close to her and she threw herself.
A man literally jumped from his balcony. He opens the window and he just jumps out. It was horrific. You could see like little children knocking on the windows, screaming, help, help, get us out, get us out.
More than 70 people are in hospital this afternoon. 20 of those are in a critical condition. Dr. Julian Redhead has been giving an update on the patients who are being treated.
We are continuing to care for patients who are primarily suffering from the effects of smoke inhalation. We're ensuring that we're doing everything we can to care for and support
those affected by this dreadful incident.
Now, as you've been hearing, the building was recently refurbished with work completed only in May last year. There are particular questions being asked about the cladding that was put up around the outside of the building. The construction firm that carried out the refurb, Rydon, has issued a statement. It says it's shocked by what happened, but that all of its work met all the required building control, fire regulation and health and safety standards. We will, of course, keep you up to date with the very latest here on Talk Radio throughout today. For the weather, very warm and sunny across England and Wales, cloudier and breezier in western Scotland and Northern Ireland. We've got highs of 28.
Robin, thank you very much. Robin with us throughout the afternoon, as she says, bringing you up to date as this awful story continues to unfold. We'll be bringing you various people this afternoon to talk to us about what might have gone wrong, what you should be doing to try and prevent this kind of thing happening where you live. All of that coming up between now and 4 o'clock. So we suspended normal programming really to bring you continued coverage as you'd expect us to. 1:32 now, you're listening to Talk Radio. I'm John Holmes.
The Paul Ross Full Set Breakfast, tomorrow morning from 6 on Talk Radio. And now for something cold, flakily different. Satisfy your appetite for meaty news debate and unfiltered comments on The Breakfast Show with Extra Bite.
I'm Paul Ross. Join me from 6 on Talk Radio. If it's on your mind, get it on the radio.
The Paul Ross Full Set Breakfast. Make toast, not war.
Tomorrow morning from 6
on Talk Radio. We'll get you talking. John Holmes on Talk Radio. We'll get you talking.
Very shortly, I'm going to be talking to Penny Sims. She's the spokesperson, beg your pardon, for British Red Cross. Before that, Sadiq Khan has issued a statement. He did that about half an hour ago, which we can bring you. This is what Sadiq Khan, Mayor of London, had to say.
Good afternoon. The Fire Commissioner has taken me to see for myself Grenfell Tower. And it is extremely distressing and devastating. Can I begin by saying my thoughts and prayers, as I'm sure the thoughts and prayers of the entire country, are with the family and friends of those in the building and affected by this tragic and horrific fire. Also, pay tribute to the amazing emergency services from the fire service. We have more than 250 firefighters, many of whom have been here from the beginning, including the Commissioner. There'll be many more working during the course of the day. Many engines and machinery here and fire service from neighbouring fire services helping us out today. Also, London Ambulance Service, more than 100 paramedics helping out during the course of the night, and more than 100 police officers. And it's worth reminding ourselves that when there are these tragic fires, these emergencies, there are literally emergency services, our firefighters running towards the fire, running towards the danger, whilst encouraging others to run away. We do know that a number of people have died, I'm afraid, and the commander has given you the figures that we have. I'm afraid it's likely that the figures are going to go up. We also know that a number of people have been taken to hospitals. Paul Woodrow, who's the gold commander for the ambulance service, will be telling you more about that. Can I just say this? If you are somebody who is worried about somebody who may have been affected by the fire, please do ring the Met Casualty Bureau on 0800 0961 233. If you're somebody who lives in the building and has left safely, please let us know you are safe, because obviously what we want to do is make sure that everyone's accounted for.
Sadiq Khan, the Mayor of London, speaking just earlier there with his statement on the awful events that are continuing in London with the fire in the Grenfell Tower block. Let's talk to somebody who has been helping out. Penny Sims is a spokesperson for the Red Cross. Good afternoon, Penny. Hello.
Good afternoon. Good
afternoon. A terrible afternoon, of course, and a terrible day for London in this sense. But I understand you, with situations like this, this is what you do. You set up a rest centre and you're helping out with the emergency services.
Yeah, so our volunteers have been here since about 3 a.m, 4 a.m. this morning. So we have volunteers who are ready to go at all hours. They just get a text message and they get down there and get on with it. It's an agreement we have with the council and the emergency services, so we're there to support. So our guys have been here. They've helped to set up the centre, There's a place for people to come in and register themselves as safe. They can also register people that they're worried about who are missing. There's somewhere for them to sit, get information, talk, food, drink. There's doctors here. The NHS have sent GPs down here, also mental health specialists. There's places for people to get clothing as well, so that there's a place for people to come, be, and wait for more information.
In terms of, you know, you're saying you're taking, you know, names of people that are safe, people can register and so on. We've just heard from Sadiq Khan there, the emergency number 0800 0961233 as well. Is that system, or how does it work? Is that centralised? So when people sort of can report to you, you're in touch with that other central system, presumably, and it gets collated in that way?
So the number that Sadiq Khan gave out, that's if you're worried, you want to report somebody is missing. When you ring through to that number, and it is specifically for this emergency, someone will take the details of the person that you're concerned about.
I see.
So their name, their phone number, when did you last speak to them? Did you ring them during this incident? And also any other personal details that could help identify them. We have had cases that have been just some confusion, I think, also with people being in one rest centre, not another, or phones running out of juice. One of my colleagues found a child who couldn't find his parents, but then we found the parents, we couldn't find the child, but at least we knew that they were both safe, so we just put them back together. So I would say if people are anxious at the moment, register yourself as safe, register any people you're worried about, but there's still information to come, so please try to just wait for that information as it comes.
Okay, Penny, and tell us a little bit, if you would, about the background of because we hear about the Red Cross, the British Red Cross, all the time, helping out in these situations, but people might not be aware of exactly how you operate and how you came to be a service working alongside these emergency services. A little bit, if you wouldn't mind, just a little bit of the background of the Red Cross's work.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, a lot of people don't realise that we do offer this service, and we do a lot of things. So, for instance, today we had the van turn up that has equipment that we have in storage ready to go for these sorts of emergencies. So we have blankets, clothing, also hygiene kits. So if you've run out of your house in the middle of the night, you're not going to have any basic sanitary items, you know, toothbrush, toothpaste, those kinds of things you need just to make yourself feel normal or before you go into some temporary accommodation. We have all that stuff. We have trained volunteers. We also know first aid, so we've set up a first aid area in there. We can provide what we call psychosocial care. It's allowing people to talk, give them practical and emotional advice, you know, trying to link them together with people if they can't find them or if they just need to sit and talk and have someone listen to them, we can do that. We do it in lots of circumstances. So, like, for example, in Brighton on a Friday, Saturday night, we're down there to support the police and the ambulance services. We also have ambulance staff. So we're there in a crisis for people who need us.
Yeah, and this is all volunteers, isn't it? This is the point. You have a veritable army of them.
Yeah, we have a lot of volunteers trained in various skills. Most people will have things like first aid training, some psychosocial skills. We have emergency response volunteers. We can also supply volunteers to help at hospitals when they get overloaded, so helping to get patients home, patient transport, helping with discharge when people need to go home but maybe just need a little bit of help to get them home and get them settled back in. So there's lots of different ways that people can help and volunteer and get involved.
All right, Penny, listen, thank you very much for taking the time. I know you're very busy down there. Spokesperson there for British Red Cross, that's Penny Sims there. And of course, if you would like to help out, now it's a terrible thing to say, but when an awful incident like this happens, and we saw it with the terror attacks as well, of course, people do come together to help. People want to help. And if you want to do something, then you could do worse, of course, than getting in touch with the British Red Cross and volunteering to help them. Right, the number again that we keep giving out, but it's right to do so, 0800 0961233. If you have any concerns about friends or relatives, that is the emergency number to call. Now, if you're just joining us, we're suspending normal programming. This is not what we normally do between 1 and 4 o'clock on Talk Radio in the afternoons. But due to the tragedy and the scale of this tower block fire, we are bringing you continued coverage of it. Here's what we know so far. 6 people are known to have been killed. More than 125 families made homeless by this blaze, with it figures expected to rise. We will bring you coverage as it continues throughout the afternoon. We'll take traffic and travel next. It's Talk Radio in the afternoons. I'm John Holmes.
Across the UK, online and on DAB.
We are Talk.
Talk Radio. Give it some lip.
Stand up to cancer on Talk Radio. Stand up, raise cash, take cancer out. Luckily, we're more equipped than ever to defy it. It's time to rise up against cancer.
Calling all rebels! Talk Radio have teamed up with Stand Up to Cancer, and together we're raising funds and raising the roof in a series of fearless challenges.
From a close shave with hair-raising results
to making serious dough from a ballsy bake-off.
Get inspired, join the rebellion, and help bring in stacks of cash for game-changing cancer treatments.
100% of the money raised go straight to those badass science boffins who save lives.
Stand Up to Cancer on Talk Radio. Rebels, you now have a cause. Search Stand Up to Cancer to sign up.
You're off to the airport. Three kids, two adults, five passports. By six tonight, you'll have soft sand between your toes and be thinking, huh, did we set the lights to come on at home? You take out your Hive app and set the lights to turn on for six. You sit back and count the passports again.
Enjoy the moment wherever you are with the Hive Welcome Home Plan for just $5.99 a month. Hive, let's get living. Search Hive. Hive services require Wi-Fi. Terms apply. Cancellation fees apply in the first 24 months.
Score yourself a winner with The Sun. Join me, The Sun's chief football reporter, Neil Ashton, for all the latest stats, chats and spats. Our coverage is more pep than Guardiola, tackles opponents tougher than Terry, and scores more winners than our mate Zlatan. Plus, don't miss your number one football pullout. It's goals every Monday, Wednesday, Saturday and Sunday. Go on, pick up The Sun today for just 50p.
Get even more from Selco Builders Warehouse this June with our Mega Drill giveaway. On top of our massive stocks of trade products at great trade prices, you could be the lucky winner of a Makita drill at every branch every weekday. That's right, at every Selco branch every weekday in June, we're giving away a Makita drill to a lucky customer. So get straight down to Selco Builders Warehouse now for a massive range of building materials and your chance to win in our Mega Drill giveaway. See selcobw.com for terms and conditions.
Selco, it's where the trade go.
Talk Radio, traffic and travel.
North of Hastings, the A28 main road through Westfield has reopened following an accident, but remains very busy in both directions. No change for the Westway in and out of London. It's closed through Notting Hill after the major incident at Grenfell Tower in the early hours of this morning. The Hammersmith and City and Circle Line services in the area are also disrupted. Very slow on the southbound M6 from 18 at Middlewich to 16 at Stoke after an accident which is now on the hard shoulder. And in Pembrokeshire, east of St David's, the A487 through Croys Gock is closed because of a vehicle fire. I'm Jarena Adams.
Skeletor got 10% off his AXA home insurance at Money Supermarket, and now he feels like his Havoc staff's a twirling baton. His boots are ballet slippers, like he's got the music inside him, like he's going to live forever. Get 10% off AXA home insurance, another epic deal, exclusively from Money Supermarket. Offer ends July 13th. New customers only when purchasing AXA home insurance through Money Supermarket. Discount excludes certain add-ons. See Money Supermarket for full T's and C's.
Across the UK, online and on DAB.
John Holmes on Talk Radio. We'll get you talking.
Good afternoon. If you are just joining us, here's what we know so far. There is, of course, this terrible fire still burning in London in this tower block. Earlier we spoke to Joe Bullock from the Royal Society for Prevention of Accidents. It sounds obvious, doesn't it? But she's right. In terms of, they're getting a lot of calls today about fire prevention. This is what happens, of course, in this sort of situation, because it's a wake-up call. And the message, of course, she was giving us is, we could just keep saying it, but not everyone has one. Smoke detectors, obviously. That is very important. She was telling us all about that. Penny Sims is working for the British Red Cross, who are working alongside the emergency services today. Alex Dibble is down there. He is Talk Radio's reporter. He's been down and he's been talking to some of the residents and some eyewitnesses for us. He spoke to Tracy Connors, who is a resident of the tower, who told him that she knows someone who had died.
When I went to pull the blind up, because it was stuffy, and opened the window, I called her, I went, oh my God, you know, we could see it alight really bad. And I thought, that's far up, it couldn't have happened, do you know what I mean, that quick really, you know. And then everyone rings round, that everybody knows one, and you hear this one's supposed to live there and he's dead and this one's dead. But you don't know, do you know what I mean? But we found out that, yeah, two are dead that we know well.
Who, how do you know them?
Friends, families for years, you know, like grown up together and things like that. My cousin was married to one of them, like divorced, got kids. Do you know what I mean? The other one's got kids, grandkids. Do you know, it's... Oh, I don't know. I can imagine they did suffer, though. If he said it was, you know, like all hot and, you know, and smoke and everything.
And I know we spoke about this a moment ago, but... And how do you know for sure that they have died?
Because the person that lived in the flats told us. She knocked at the door, apparently, and told him to get out, but he didn't come out. So...
Do you know why? Did she say why?
It was too smoky and too hot in his flat, so he couldn't get out.
Oh, he couldn't get out?
No, it was the floor was all hot or something, and it was really smoky. He said, I'm going in a shower or something like that. So I should imagine if they find him, he's in the shower with the water, I suppose, putting your water over you. I mean, that's what we, you know, like we've heard, but it's coming from a good source, so... To say anything different, you've got to be sick to make up something. Do you know what I mean? So I should imagine it's true.
And what are the emotions for you as someone who's lived here for a while?
God, I've lived here all my life. Do you know what I mean? So especially when you know people as well, and there's kids, you can hear kids screaming and grown men screaming out, help, 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 and there's something you can do, you know what I mean, to help them.
It seems like there's been an incredible response from the community.
Yeah, all down that my roadway and everything, you know what I mean? All down in Tabernacle, all the churches, anywhere. Even people have rung up. I was talking to someone. She said she didn't mind housing a woman and her two children, but no men, obviously, because she's got little kids herself. But she would house them. Loads of people have been saying that, you know, they put people up, they don't know where to go. But that's what I'm saying. They all pulled together around here, but really good. Do you know what I mean?
Tracy Connors, she is a resident of the tower, which is still on fire in London. Of course, Grenfell Tower, talking to Alex Dibble just a little earlier. You're listening to Talk Radio in the afternoons. We've been hearing a lot from people who have been involved in this awful incident. Of course, residents and neighbours, people in the community. But what's it like for the people who are sent into these buildings to try and... put these fires out? Let's talk to Alan Daly. He's a firefighter, not a London firefighter. He's not involved in the incident at all, but he does know what he's talking about. Good afternoon, Alan.
Afternoon.
It's really good to have you on. Thank you very much indeed. So with an incident like this, you know, all praise to the emergency services. I understand they were on the scene within 6 minutes of the first call. That's what we heard today from the Commissioner of the London Fire Brigade. But when you arrive on a scene of this nature, what happens, Alan, from your perspective, as a perspective of a firefighter?
First of all, we have to remember the people who have tragically lost their lives in this major incident today. So our condolences go out to their family and loved ones. But when we turn up an incident like this, the first thing an OIC or the incident commander will do is assess what is going on, what resources he needs at the incident, and he will then send a message back to our control, letting them know what resources he needs to deal with such a major incident like this. Because you're looking at manpower, you're looking at incident command units, so people that can monitor what's going on, take notes, send information, and gather information for the incident command. So there's a lot of resources required at a major incident like this.
Yeah, and in terms of those resources themselves, I mean, there were 40 fire engines on that scene, and that, I mean, is there a set number of fire engines per fire station, or does that vary? And you know, where do 40 fire engines come from?
All over London, to be honest with you, each fire station, some have got one, some have got two fire engines, some have got specials, which will be like aerial ladder platforms. And other vehicles to deal with different kind of incidents, whether a chemical or road traffic incidents. So each fire station is set up differently. But an initial response, so a high rise will have 10 pumps, an aerial ladder, and maybe a water carrier. And then they will basically risk assess it. The control will, on the calls that come in, and if they think actually we need more pumps because there's a lot of calls, they will send more pumps. And same with the OIC or the incident commander who turns up. If he deems that they need more pumps, he will make up straight away and send a priority message requesting more pumps and more manpower.
And we're hearing, or have been hearing, of course, that the firefighters on the scene are in the building, working their way up. This is what we heard earlier, sort of containing the fire almost floor by floor as best they can. And in terms of that, I mean, that is an incredibly high pressure situation. Of course, the public at large, myself included, you know, we have no concept of what that job is like. So talk us through, you know, what it's like to be in a building when this sort of thing is happening.
I don't think people even appreciate the equipment we have to carry just for our fire boots, our tunic, our leggings, our breathing apparatus. They all weigh nearly a stone. Yeah. So before you bring in your breaking equipment, your hoses, and your first aid bag or any other emergency equipment, you're carrying a stone in weight on your person. And then depending whether you're the rescue crew or whether you're the firefighting crew, you will be taking in a firefighter medium, which will be either a hose reel or a 45mm jet, or sometimes even a 70mm jet, to try and tackle the fire, but also protect yourself on your egress in and your egress out. And also when firefighters go into a scenario like that, you cannot see in front of your nose, so you rely on your training and your instinct and your procedures to get you into that building and make sure you know how you're getting back out, because it is all through touch and feel and landmarking as you go along. And then each firefighter will go in as a team, either two or four, depends on how they're structured as a crew to go in. And they'll be given call signs, whether Alpha 1, Alpha 2, Alpha 3, Alpha 4, so that the breathing apparatus entry control officer outside knows who's gone into the building, knows what teams, and they can get the information back to him. But also, each room then will have to be searched. So they will send back messages to the incident command, telling room 1 searched, room 2 search, room 3 search, room 4 search.
And we're talking about a hell of a lot of rooms in something this size, though, as well, of course. So the time that must take.
It does. But you're also talking about a flat. So you'll go into the flat and you will have to search maybe 4 rooms in that flat, come out of that flat into the next flat, search another 4 or 5 rooms in that flat. And it's about making sure that you do the full searches so that nobody is left behind.
Yeah. And of course, you don't know the building either. I mean, do you have a plan of it before you go in? Or is it literally a case of you have to just find what you, as you do when you go in?
You have a plan sometimes with the information that comes back to you. And a lot of the high rises have got a firebox that has got plans.
Sort of like floor plans, presumably.
They are, yeah, very much, yeah. So therefore, the incident commander and the incident command unit, they can tick off as they're getting that information back and say, right, that room's been searched, that room's been searched. But as you can imagine, in a high rise, as happened, it takes a lot of resources, a lot of manpower. And, you know, you must remember, it wasn't too long ago that 10 fire stations were closed in London.
Yeah.
So, you know, questions have got to be asked, because there's so many more high-rises now in London. You need these resources when things go horribly wrong.
Do you think it was a question of... because obviously, the fire's still burning. We're learning right now that the fire crews have reached the 19th and the 20th floor as I speak. It's a 24-floor storey building, of course. And do you think it is a case of the there aren't enough firefighters on the scene, or is that, you know, the number you'd expect to be on something this large?
You'd expect that number. When a fire crew goes into a situation like this and they go in with their breathing apparatus, they'll have a set time where they can last with that air. And then when they come out of that, they're physically, both mentally and physically, drained, that they will have to have a rest for an hour, maybe an hour and a half, as much as they want to recommit back in again. They have to let their body cool down. Otherwise, they're facing putting themselves in huge risk. So it's a case of having relief crews there to be able to take on that responsibility. And at the same time, if you flood the building with too many people, then the information that you're getting back is not correct, and potentially putting other people at risk, really. Yeah. So it's a control structure that's set up within the fire brigade. Everything we do is very controlled, so therefore we don't miss anything. We do rush in and we do help people, but in a controlled manner. And then, like I said, the information is fed back, so each area and each room is properly searched and signed off. Yeah. And then when we come across casualties, again, that information will be laid back to the incident command unit, so that when it comes to the coroner's report, things like that, people have the right information, right time, when casualties or bodies were located. All that information is crucial to the fire investigation.
I see. And just, as I said, it's impossible for me and those who have never been in this situation to imagine what it must be like to go into one of these situations. How does it feel when you're about to go in, knowing the danger that the people in there are in, of course, the danger you'll be putting yourself in? Is it a time for emotion? Is there any room for that? Or does training just take over the moment you step through that door?
Training kicks in straight away. That's why it's so important. We do fantastic training, keep our skills up to date, and you're going to training mode straight away. Your OIC will give you a brief, you know what you're doing, and you go in there and you do your job. And I don't think it's until afterwards that you actually sit down and reflect of the danger you're in. You know, we are here to help the public in any way we possibly can. You know, we are here to do our very, very best, and we always turn up at every job and try and do our utmost, both for the public and for ourselves. Because if we put ourselves, we end up falling down in the job, then there's another crew that have to be committed to rescue us. Yeah. So it's about knowing how far your body can go, and how far you can actually push it before you reach maximum exhaustion. And this is why the EFU were campaigning with the government about firefighters' pensions and you know, working until we're 60. It's a very physical, demanding job. It's a young person's job.
Yeah.
And, you know, and this is what we were campaigning, you know, a couple of years back, saying, you know, we love to stay in the job. We love to do this job, but we'll reach an age where, unfortunately, we are not going to be physically able to go into these buildings and rescue these people. And we do not want firefighters' deaths. We do not want to be put in a situation where we are not fit to rescue the people within these buildings.
And indeed, that's a risk.
High rise.
Obviously, that's a risk to the public as well. You know, it's in everyone's interest that people remain fit. You know, running up some stairs in a burning building with a stone's worth of equipment, as you were saying, if you're 60, is a lot different to if you're doing it when you're 25 or whatever, isn't it?
It is. And this is, you know, the information that the FBU, the Fire Brigade Union, were trying to get out to the public, that, you know, we want to stay in this job. I love this job. It's a great job. I work with some amazing people who day in, day out, do their utmost best to help and protect the public. But, you know, there will come a time in our late 50s, early 60s, when, unfortunately, your body's do pack up, and you know, that's when I'm saying a stone with just fire boots, tunic, leggings, breathing apparatus. That's before you put hoses over your shoulders,
yeah,
before you bring in your hooligan tools so you can kick doors down. And then you've got to run up 25 set of stairs to kind of set up, you know, your bridgehead, with all your other bits of equipment. You know, you need to be at the top of your game. And unfortunately, you know, this is something that they didn't understand when we were trying to explain this to
well,
the public.
Well, it's situations like this that, of course, bring that very much home. There'll be a lot of fallout for this, including for those cuts to the fire brigade and certainly to the London stations. That's Alan Daly. Thank you very much, Alan. That was very interesting and enlightening. He's a firefighter. He's not involved in this incident, but I think you'll agree that was a good insight on what happens when these fire crews do an incredible job of going into these situations that you or I wouldn't even consider going anywhere near. It's 2 o'clock. We're going to take the news next after the ads and continue with our coverage this afternoon of this of this tower block fire in London, which continues to burn. We know that there are 6 fatalities so far. That number is expected to rise. There are people still unaccounted for. If you have concerns about somebody and their whereabouts, there is an emergency number for you. It is this, 0800 0961 233. We'll, as I say, continue the coverage as we go. Robin will have the latest for you next on Talk Radio in the afternoons.
Talk Radio.
We got entertainment and we're not afraid to use it. Talk Radio.
Listen. Do you hear that? That's the sound of nothing. Sounds nice, doesn't it? At Ford, we like the sweet sound of nothing too. That's why we now have 0% APR representative across our Ford car range on 3-year Ford options. Visit your nearest participating Ford dealer today. Ford. Go further.
Retail only. Vehicles to be contracted from April the 1st to June the 30th, 2017 and registered between April the 1st and September the 30th, 2017. Finance subject to status. Guarantees may be required. Free post Ford credit. Exclude selected models. Please contact your Ford dealer for more information.
All good things must come to an end. And Matt's beloved work boots have just trod their final step. Time to click and collect from Screwfix. Whatever you need for the job, with Screwfix you can check stock online, then just click and collect in as little as 1 minute from any of our 520 stores nationwide. Screwfix, here when you need us.
We all like to feel our money is safe. That's why I, an ordinary little piggy bank,
I'm becoming an armour-plated, rivet-reinforced, titanium-clad piggy bank.
And your money is just as safe too. Because should anything happen to your bank, building society or credit union, the Financial Services Compensation Scheme protects up to £85,000 of your money. Search FSCS Protected for more information.
Lucy's dad's favourite pesto pork.
When I was little, dad loved doing a barbecue. The minute the sun came out, he was straight outside. He always made his favourite pesto pork while I ran around the garden causing havoc. So today, when Dad comes to visit, I'm treating him to pesto pork with char-grilled fennel and crispy crackling on the side. Difference is, now it's my kids who run around causing havoc.
Find Lucy's Dad's favourite pesto pork recipe online or in-store. Food Love Stories, brought to you by Tesco.
Across the UK, online and on DAB. Access all radios.
Talk Radio. Give it some lip. Talk Radio.
It's just after 2 o'clock. Good afternoon. It is Talk Radio. I'm John Holmes. Robin's got the latest news for you.
Thank you very much, John. Coming up, 6 dead as a fire rips through a London tower block.
How could this happen? How could something like this happen? There's 125 families in there.
And questions are being asked about exactly how it took hold so quickly.
It should not be possible for a fire to develop in this way.
Talk Radio.
At least 6 people are dead after a huge fire at a tower block in West London, and officials say the death toll is expected to rise. 74 people are currently in 6 hospitals across the capital, 20 of them in a critical condition. The fire brigade were called out to Grenfell Tower just after 12 midnight last night, and over 12 hours later they're still working in the building. London's fire commissioner is Danny Cotton.
The fire crews continue to work tirelessly to go into the premises, to extinguish the remaining fire and to search the premises. This is a completely unprecedented fire. In my 29 years in the London Fire Brigade, I have never seen a fire of this nature, and I have seen many high-rise fires.
The building is home to over 120 families spread over 24 floors. Many found themselves trapped as the blaze ripped through them. Ahmed Chelat has a family who lived on the 21st floor. He spoke to them in the early hours, but he hasn't heard anything since.
I said, what did they ask you to do? She said, they asked us to cover the doors with towels. The last thing she said, smoke is coming heavily through the door into the flat. And that was the last time we heard of her.
Grenfell Tower was recently refurbished with the work completed in May last year. The construction firm responsible for the refurb, Ryden, says it's shocked by what's happened and that all of its work did meet the required building control, fire regulations and health and safety standards. There are some questions about cladding that was used on the outside of the tower. Matt Rack from the Fire Brigades Union says that will have to form part of the investigation.
There are systems whereby cladding is applied to buildings, and the owners and the people doing the work, the contractors, would clearly be expected to undertake risk assessments and ensure that any alterations, including cladding, would comply with the necessary requirements, so that this shouldn't be happening if it is the cladding. But we don't know that as yet.
And we'll, of course, bring you the very latest from the scene of this blaze throughout today here on Talk Radio. Some other news quickly in brief. A senior US congressman has been shot and injured at a baseball practice in Northern Virginia. And Diane Abbott has revealed she has type 2 diabetes. The Labour MP says her condition was out of control, and that's why she had to pull out of the election campaigning last week.
Talk Radio National Weather.
Staying warm and sunny across England and Wales. A bit cloudier and breezier for Scotland and Northern Ireland. Highs are 28.
Thank you very much, Robin. Robin bringing us the latest, of course, as the afternoon wears on with this terrible story. Let's go to Tim now, though, for an update of the sport.
Talk Radio Sports Update.
I'm Tim Humphrey. We'll start with the cricket. Pakistan won the toss in Cardiff and opted to bowl first in the Champions Trophy semi-final with England, and it's not looking a bad decision. A few moments ago, England were 193 for 7 in the 47th over. Fans are filling in their diaries and checking train times with the release of the Premier League fixtures for the new season. It all starts on Saturday, August the 12th. Champions Chelsea start their title defence at home to Burnley. They then travel to rivals Tottenham a week later. As for the newly promoted sides, Huddersfield are away at Crystal Palace on the opening day, Brighton and Hove Albion host Manchester City, and Newcastle welcome Tottenham. Former England manager Sven-Göran Eriksson has been sacked by the Chinese club Shenzhen after just 6 months in charge. He took over the second-tier side in December, but they've not been in great form. Ban Ki-moon has been proposed as the new chair of the International Olympic Committee's Ethics Commission by the organisation's executive board. The 73-year-old former United Nations Secretary-General will earn in September if he's got the job. That's the latest sport, powered by TalkSport.
Talk Radio. John Holmes on Talk Radio. We'll get you talking.
Good afternoon. It is Talk Radio. It's 7 minutes past 2 o'clock, and we are bringing you continued coverage of the awful events in London in this tower block, the Grenfell Tower block, which is still ablaze. Sir David Amos, MP, is on the line. He is the chair of the All-Party Parliamentary Fire Safety and Rescue Group. Good afternoon, Sir David.
Good afternoon to you, although obviously it's a terrible afternoon.
It certainly is. And it's been a terrible, terrible overnight and terrible morning, and it continues. Now, you... you know what you're talking about in this regard. You're the chair of this all-party committee. What work do you do? What do you do in that committee, Dave?
Well, it's one of the most active parliamentary committees that I've ever been associated with. So the attendance by colleagues of all parties is very high. And we have regular meetings where we invite real experts from across the fire industry to discuss all sorts of matters with us. We have inquiries and we make recommendations. So it's a very, very active committee. And the reason for its existence is to ensure that fires do not happen. Fires can be avoided without any doubt.
So what's gone wrong? I mean, difficult to speculate, I realise. But in terms of, you know, your opinion, really, I suppose, on what could have gone wrong here, given... you know, the regulations that are in place these days, and you know, firefighters have been telling us this afternoon that they've never seen anything like this.
Yes, well, the speed of the fire is quite extraordinary, but until we've had a full investigation, it's difficult to say why it spread so quickly. But the one thing our committee bangs on about all the time is sprinklers, sprinklers, sprinklers. Now, today... if a building is 30 metres high, then it must have a sprinkler. But of course, there are many tower blocks built before them. Mm. And following the Lackanal fire in Camberwell in 2009, where six people lost their lives, our recommendation was that it was down to each local council and landlord to determine the appropriateness of the lack of fire sprinklers in these tower blocks. We very much hope the local authorities and our housing associations up and down the length and breadth of our country have done that. And our group recommended that due to the speed that the fire spread in Lackanol House, that building regulations should be reviewed. And it's nearly 11 years since these building regulations have been reviewed. And the final thing is we've become frustrated that the ministers, there seems to be a constant turnover of ministers with responsibility for fire safety, and there doesn't seem to be joined up governments between between the two or three departments involved. And it's been very, very frustrating, really, that successive ministers since 2013 have said that they are still looking at these fire building regulations. I mean, whether it's a problem with the civil servants, I don't know. But what I'm absolutely determined is that when the government is formed, we have a new minister, Nick Hurd, that we have an immediate meeting with him. But I'm told that the Prime Minister has already acted in terms of trying to get help to those people who have lost their homes, yeah, and to make sure that immediate assistance is given.
In Southwark, which is the one you're talking about, the Lakenhall House, yeah, one, 2009, the council did plead guilty, didn't they?
There
were
did.
Four counts of breaking
Absolutely.
Fire safety regulations. But even, I say, in this day and age, 2009, that's recent. And fire safety regulations, you know, we know how strict they are. Yeah. You know, it's incredible, isn't it, that a council yeah. isn't taking care of residents in this way?
Well, it is very, very disappointing that local authorities and housing associations, if it's true, have not been acting seriously. But, you know, fundamentally behind all this, we've had endless meetings with the Department of Education to ensure that all new schools have sprinklers fitted. Mm. And we still haven't got a commitment over that. So it's tragic, really. Our committee tries desperately to get some sort of coverage of our recommendations. And it's only when there's a tragedy like this that
we, people hear about it,
yeah,
of course.
Yeah, a little bit like people wanting a zebra crossing. And it's only till someone is injured or killed that you get any yeah. focus on it.
Well, this action
Because you
group.
Cannot put money on any person's life.
Well, precisely. And this,
just can't.
This action group that we've been hearing a lot about today, this is yeah. the Grenfell Action Group. Now, they've yes. been blogging, as you know, I'm sure, about this for some time. They said in November 2016, I have the blog here, only a catastrophic event would expose these issues, which is what you've just been saying. They've done a press release today on top of this, because people obviously have been looking at their, yes. their warnings, as it
yes.
were. They're saying, and this is a quote, from the Health and Safety Officer in 2012. The fire extinguisher in this building, this is Grenfell House we're talking about,
yeah.
the basement boiler room, the lift motor room, the ground floor electrical room, plus other areas, were out of test date, according to the label on the extinguishers. The last test date at that point was the 8th of August 2011. And some located in the roof level areas, this is fire extinguisher, had condemned written on them in large black writing with the last test date of 2009 or 2010. Now, that indicates that checks are not being carried out at all by those responsible for doing these checks, doesn't it?
Well, that is shocking and disgraceful. And I now would urge all my parliamentary colleagues, whatever political party that they belong to insist that the local authority or housing associations in their constituencies do an immediate audit, check fire safety precautions within tower blocks within their constituencies. I have only one tower block in my constituency, Beaver Towers, and I will be asking the Housing Association what arrangements are in place in terms of fire safety precautions, and I hope all colleagues would do that.
Yeah, well, indeed, and it just seems that, I mean, I'm sitting here thinking, you know, lessons don't seem to have been learned after this, you know, your committee set up to the aftermath of this 2009 fire we're talking about in another high-rise. And as you say, we're
well,
almost...
Well, it's been very frustrating that so many of these expert witnesses that we have, some of whom are retired, are all giving up their time voluntarily to try and help government departments. It's just been so frustrating that we don't seem to be getting anywhere. But I would assume that in the light of this terrible, terrible disaster, we will now be taken seriously and we'll get some action. And we don't have to wait for the government to get going. All local authorities, all housing associations should do a proper audit of the 4,000 tower blocks that we're talking about.
That's a high number. And there'll be people listening to this who live in tower blocks, of course, watching this unfold today. And in terms of your advice to them, is it along with you to put pressure on their housing associations and on their councils now, who will be listening, we would like to think, although we said that last time in 2009, of course, but is your advice for these residents to act, you know, on their own behalf if they're doing it for them?
Very much so. I mean, some of them will have a consortium, they'll have a representative committee to take a group decision on this matter. And I would say to everyone, if they feel they're not getting anywhere, contact your local Member of Parliament and let the local Member of Parliament lead on this particular issue. Because Parliament is the place where laws are decided overall. I don't think we need legislation to make this happen. We just need common sense and some action.
Well, that's what it seems, yes.
Yeah. But if the groups aren't getting anywhere, then use your Member of Parliament to ensure that there is some action on this issue and that an immediate review and audit is taken of tower blocks within their own area.
I mean, if those regulations have been updated, you know, between 2009 and now, I mean, can we assume, I can't, it's hard to assume, but, you know, would we be looking at, you know, people probably wouldn't have died, would they, in this way, if those regulations had been
followed? Well, I think I started this interview by saying that all fires can be avoided. There's no question of that. I'm not talking about terrorist attacks, but all fires can be avoided in terms of homes, tower blocks, offices. There are sensible precautions which need to be taken to avoid fires breaking out. And it's very, very frustrating that you make recommendations. Now, I'm not pretending that there isn't cost involved in all this, but when you tell me that fire extinguishers, escape routes weren't safe, this is totally, totally unacceptable.
And, of course, illegal. So what's... Absolutely. And we know what happened with Southwark Council. Of course, they did plead guilty over that 2009 fire. And presumably your committee and others now will be looking to... again, we don't know the circumstances quite yet, I realise, but, you know, looking to... There's someone in a council panicking at the moment, isn't there? Because someone's not done their job properly.
I suspect there's a fair bit of truth in what you've said. Apparently this tower block was recently refurbished. Again, our committee has looked very, very carefully at the material used in refurbishing these tower blocks and in the cladding, because they obviously mustn't be inflammatory.
Yeah.
And again, that is something else which must be acted on immediately. We cannot risk any people's lives, and it's absolutely tragic that here we are, you and I, talking about these matters, where if only the recommendations of our committee had been acted on, I think we perhaps wouldn't be having this conversation now.
Sir David Amos, MP. Listen, thank you very much indeed. He's the chair of the All-Party Parliamentary Fire Safety and Rescue Group. Very interesting. And it does take something like this, of course, to bring it home and makes you wonder why on earth these procedures and recommendations aren't followed. It'll be interesting, certainly, to see what happens next in the future. Promises were made after that 2009 fire that David was referring to in Southwark in London. But clearly, none of those recommendations were followed. So what will happen next? Stay with us. We're on Talk Radio. We're here till 4 o'clock. Sam Delaney will bring you Drive from 4. He's live down at the scene, actually. They were bringing you Drive Time from... just outside Grenfell Tower there, talking to people on the scene. We continue to talk to people between now and four, just to keep you updated, really, on the story as it unfolds. We'll take traffic and travel next and be back with you very shortly. Talk Radio, I'm John Holmes.
Talk Radio, 24-hour radio debate and entertainment.
Talk Radio.
We'll get you talking.
Stand up to cancer on Talk Radio. Stand up, raise cash, take cancer out. Luckily, we're more equipped than ever to defy it. It's time to rise up against cancer.
Calling all rebels!
goals. Talk Radio have teamed up with Stand Up To Cancer, and together we're raising funds and raising the roof in a series of fearless challenges.
From a close shave with hair-raising results,
to making serious dough from a ballsy bake-off.
Get inspired, join the rebellion, and help bring in stacks of cash for game-changing cancer treatments.
100% of the money raised goes straight to those badass science boffins who save lives.
Stand Up To Cancer on Talk Radio. Rebels, you now have a cause. Search Stand Up To Cancer to sign up.
Stuck for Father's Day gift ideas? At B&Q, the Dremel Hobby Tool Bundle with McAllister safety glasses and a pair of gloves is just £35. That's a saving of over £16. Hurry, offer ends Monday. So for great Father's Day deals, come to B&Q. Savings based on individual selling prices. Offer starts Friday 9th of June. See DIY.com for details.
This June, if you test drive the Qashqai, Juke or X-Trail, Nissan will give you an extra £650 off. That's up to a massive £2,900 on a Qashqai at only 4.99% APR representative. Yes, Nissan will give you money off, just for test driving our best-selling crossover range. I know it sounds unlikely, but that's what it says here in this script. I haven't read it wrong. I'm a properly trained actor. I've done Shakespeare and telly and hundreds of voiceovers. Search Nissan offers if you don't believe me. Nissan. Innovation that excites. Nissan Finance. 4.99%. 9% APR representative. Offer excludes Vizier grade. Subject to status over 18s. Order and register before the 2nd of July from participating dealers only. T's and C's at nissan.co.uk.
The American Golf Trade-In continues. Save, trade and upgrade your old clubs for brand new ones. Visit for a free valuation today. Terms and conditions apply.
There are over 15,000 products in the new Screwfix catalogue. Surprising how easy it is to pick up, really. The new Screwfix catalogue. Packed with tools, accessories and loads of great trade deals. Pick up your free copy from any of our 520 stores nationwide. Screwfix. Here when you need us.
Talk Radio, traffic and travel.
You still can't get on the M180 in Lincolnshire. This is west at Junction 5. The entry slip's closed to the recovery of an overturned lorry. Traffic to the east of Huntington's very busy on the eastbound A14 after early problems, so in the Cambridge direction. No change in and out of London for the Westway through Notting Hill. It is still closed after the major incident at Grenfell Tower. Hammersmith and City and Circle Line services in the area are disrupted. And in Pembrokeshire, the A487 to the east of St David's is closed through Croys Gock. That's because of a vehicle fire. I'm Joanna Adams.
Hi, I'm Ryan Reynolds, and I'm going to demonstrate just how far around the home BT Infinity can reach in the next 20 seconds. Here goes. I can get Wi-Fi here in the kitchen. Back here in the bathroom. Oh, look at that. Out here in the garden. Even way up in the attic. You know what? Let's just take my word for it.
BT Infinity, the UK's most powerful Wi-Fi versus major broadband providers.
To verify, visit bt.com/smarthub.
Talk Radio, the 21st century dream team of dialogue, debate and discourse.
Talk Radio, give it some lip.
John Holmes on Talk Radio. We'll get you talking.
You're listening to Talk Radio in the afternoon. It's 22 minutes past 2 o'clock. We continue to bring you coverage, of course, of the terrible events in London today with this enormous fire. Unprecedented is the word that even seasoned firefighters have been using to talk radio this afternoon. We still don't know how it spread so quickly. That seems to be the unusual nature of it. It couldn't be and still hasn't been fully contained, of course. Let's talk to Colin Todd. He is the Managing Director of CS Todd and Associates. They are fire safety consultants. Drafted the National Guidance on Fire Safety in purpose-built blocks of flats. It seems something's gone wrong here, Colin, doesn't it?
I think that's a very tragic understatement. Mm. Yeah, absolutely. It's a complete disaster, really. And the word unprecedented is already becoming a bit of a cliche, but there is no other word for it.
Yeah, that's the thing. And that's what we're hearing. I mean, it's and watching the footage, you know, that it started to emerge last night and is still happening now, of course, is you can see how fast this is moving through a building, which regulations suggest it shouldn't be able to do.
It should be completely impossible. We design blocks of flats and indeed have designed blocks of flats for many decades such that any fire will be contained within the flat in which it occurs. And there are small departures from that. We do see the occasional fire spread, but I've been in fire safety for 41 years, and I've never seen anything remotely like this.
Yeah. So what, I mean, you know, you with your expertise, I mean, you do know what you're talking about. What could have gone wrong here? What are the possibilities that led to this?
I think it's probably wrong to speculate at such an early stage. Something has, it's simply, a tragic truism that something has permitted fire to spread throughout the block with extreme rapidity. I know people are already talking on the internet about the external cladding, and that must be something certainly to look at. But I think it would be wrong to speculate at this stage as to what exactly has gone wrong. It's something that needs to be urgently determined.
It is, and this is something that and we've been talking about this, and I'm sure you're aware of it as well, the Grenfell Action Group. This is a group of residents who have been concerned specifically about fire safety in that tower block and others. They've put out a press release. We couldn't get anyone to talk to us. I think they're busy, but they put out a bit of a press release and just outlining some of the things. I mean, we spoke to Sir David Amos MP. He's the chair of the All Cross-Party Parliamentary Committee on Fire Safety. Some of the extinguishers located in the roof level areas of Grenfell Tower had condemned written on them in large black writing with the last test dates of 2009 or 2010. And that seems to indicate a sort of lackadaisical attitude to the whole place, doesn't it, really?
I think that will come out in the aftermath of this when a full investigation takes place. The fire precautions at this block, as at any block of flats, should have been subject to a fire risk assessment. That's a requirement of the Regulatory Reform Fire Safety Order. And that will no doubt be one of the things that investigators wish to consider. And, yeah. And it's important for your listeners to understand that if anybody has a responsibility for any block of flats, and I'm not implying this block didn't have one, because I've got absolutely no idea, but if anyone has any responsibility for managing a block of flats, however small, or owning a block of flats, it's important to ensure that there is an up-to-date fire risk assessment.
Of course, yeah. And we should say as well, the company that did this cladding and the refurbishment that we've been hearing about, a two-year, £10 million refurbishment plan on this block of flats, it's a company called Rydon. They've said that they were shocked here of the fire. They did say the work met all required building control, fire regulation and health safety standards. That's what they've said. In terms of those standards and those regulations, Colin, what are they? What when a tower block, is it retrofitted on older tower blocks? Is that what happens? Because obviously new tower blocks will be custom built, but do things get retrofitted as regulations change?
Building regulations in relation to external fire spread have not really changed in many years. They have robustly required the appropriate measures or imposed the appropriate objectives for many decades. And in this particular case, were the issue to be external fire spread, and that's still to be determined. Mm-hmm. But since you raised that point, the requirement is quite simply that the external walls of the building have to adequately resist the spread of fire over the walls. That's been a requirement for many, many years.
Yeah.
And it is expressed in the regulations as what we call a functional requirement. In other words, that's the objective that must be achieved. And there is guidance, perfectly good guidance available on how that should be achieved, produced by government.
Right, and in terms of the spread of fires, because, you know, you think about blocks of flats or any building at all these days, including the building we work in here, you know, there are fire safety doors that are automatically closed to keep yeah. fires contained. Now, obviously, and that suggests, in a way, that if that building did have them, that the fire spread on the outside of the building would be an explanation for this, because surely inside, the very nature of it, which is why people are using that cliched word, as we said, unprecedented, is how on earth can a fire spread when the building is designed not to allow it to?
Well, that's precisely what needs to be determined. We build blocks of flats and have done for half a century, such that if there is a fire in any flat, then the fire is contained within the flat
yeah.
and doesn't spread. And in general, that works. I mean, I think it's important to reassure your listeners that principle works day in, day out. There are probably something like 20 to 30 fires in blocks of flats in England every day. And
Wow, that many? I had no idea that was that's a...
Yeah, well, if you take, a figure I happen to have to hand is that in the year 2009 to 2010, and it's probably not terribly different today, there were 8,000 fires in blocks of flats.
Wow.
And only 22 of those fires, which is a very small proportion, necessitated evacuation of more than 5 people with the assistance of the fire service.
Right.
So the principle of containment works terribly well.
Yeah.
And when a fire death does occur in a block of flats, then it is virtually always... because there was a fire in the person's own flat. It is really, really rare in the extreme for anyone to die from fire because of a fire in a neighbour's flat.
All right. Listen, that's interesting. Thank you for bringing this up today. I had no idea the numbers were so high. But if you are listening, as Colin says, there is reassurance that this is incredibly rare, of course, if you are in a high-rise and concerned. And you were listening to Sir David Amos MP as well with his advice on that, is do get in contact. If you get no joy from a housing association or from a council, contact your MP. And as you'd imagine, after this terrible tragedy, that will fairly be at the top of your MP's agenda. So now is the time to check the fire regulations and safety procedures in the block of flats, or indeed wherever you live. Frankly, we heard a lot about smoke alarms earlier. I've had a text in here that just says, listen, John Holmes this afternoon on the radio, completely reminded me that I haven't checked my smoke alarm for a couple of years. Did so, no batteries, replaced them. So, you know, people just forget. And so that's a message, you know, we were talking earlier about this to the Royal Society for Prevention of Accidents as well. This kind of stuff is important. This is what it takes to bring it home. Sadly, terrible events like today. But we will continue to bring you the news as it unfolds. That starts now because Robin's here. It's 2:31. She's got the latest news headlines on Talk Radio.
Talk Radio. Thank you very much, John. The Grenfell Tower block remains alight over 12 hours after fire ripped through its 24 floors last night. 6 people have been killed in the blaze. Over 70 are injured. 20 of those are in a critical condition in hospital. Witnesses have reported desperate scenes with people at windows and balconies trying to escape the blaze.
All we could see was the building like up in flames and people screaming, help me, I've got a child, I've got a baby, please help me get out. Torches and blankets being waved.
The lady, she was calling for the help and then the fire comes close to her, she threw herself.
A man literally jumped from his balcony. He opens the window and he just jumps out. It was horrific. You could see like little children knocking on the windows, screaming, help, help, get us out, get us out.
As I said, more than 70 people are in hospital, 6 hospitals across the capital. Dr. Julian Redhead is at one of them. He's been giving us an update on the patients he's been treating.
We are continuing to care for patients who are primarily suffering from the effects of smoke inhalation. We're ensuring that we're doing everything we can to care for and support those affected by this dreadful incident.
The building was recently refurbished with work completed in May last year. There are particular questions at the moment about the cladding that was put around the outside of the tower block. The construction firm that carried out the refurb, Ryden, says it is shocked by what's happened. And in a statement, it says that all of its work met all the required building control, fire regulation and health and safety standards. Now, a fatal blaze at a tower block in South London back in 2009 did lead to recommendations that the fire and safety regulations should be updated. That hasn't happened. Sir David Amos was on the committee that made the recommendations. He's been speaking to Talk Radio.
It's absolutely tragic that here we are, you and I, talking about these matters, where if only the recommendations of our committee had been acted on, I think we perhaps wouldn't be having this conversation now.
Now, we will, of course, be keeping you up to date throughout this afternoon and this evening on the very latest from the Grenfell Tower fire here on Talk Radio. For your weather, very warm and sunny across England and Wales, a bit cloudier and breezier for Western Scotland and Northern Ireland, highs of 28.
Robin, thank you. Robin's with us throughout the afternoon, of course, bringing us up to date as we go. That's the latest that we have. We'll be talking to Dr. Jill Tolfrey next. She's Chief Executive of the Firefighters Charity. Because I think it's quite interesting to get a viewpoint on what we spoke earlier, if you were listening, to a firefighter, to find out what they feel when they have to go into this situation. Training, of course, kicks in. But what's the toll that it has on them psychologically? We'll be finding out with Jill very shortly. Talk Radio in the afternoons. I'm John Holmes.
Every weeknight from 10 p.m., take a far-out trip into the twilight zone of late-night radio with Ian Doo-Doo-Doo-Doo-Doo-Doo-Doo-Doo-Lee.
Unmissable late-night radio with the original king of unconventional conversation.
Ian Lee on air and off the leash.
My name's Ian Lee. I'm on at 10 o'clock at night, 10 till 1. It's going to be awesome.
The radio show for people who know the best part of the day is the night.
Make contact with Ian Lee.
Late night Ian Lee. Tonight from 10 on Talk Radio.
He is our friend.
Across the UK, online and on DAB.
John Holmes on Talk Radio. We'll get you talking.
You heard Sir David Amess MP there in the news. That clip was taken from an interview we did just earlier on the programme with him. He's devastated by the idea that the recommendations that his committee put in place after that fire in Southwark in London in 2009 haven't been followed, and it seems to have led to this. The government, I'm just reading this here, this is interesting because the then housing minister Gavin Barwell, right? Okay, the government was warned earlier this year of the deadly danger posed by fire safety failings in tower blocks. Now, this is fire experts said in March that after review into building regulations, Parliament should ask, and I quote, really serious questions about the safety of tower blocks and the danger posed by fire. Housing Minister, as I say, Gavin Barwell, then Housing Minister, committed to review the specific part of the building regulations that relate to fire safety, but the report was delayed, and a spokesperson for the government then refused to give a date for the launch of the review. Gavin Barwell, of course, now Theresa May's Chief of Staff, so I imagine he will have questions to answer on this in the coming days. Let's talk now, though, to, as I said, Dr. Jill Tolfrey. She is Chief Executive of the Firefighters Charity. Hi, Jill.
Hello.
Thanks very much for joining us. We talked earlier to a firefighter, not a London firefighter, but someone who gave us a very interesting insight into the pressures that firefighters face when they go into buildings, the amount of equipment they have to carry and so on and so forth. And again, talking about the age of firefighters and how long they have to work for and the fact that it's such a physical job. Your charity, I guess, takes care of firefighters. What is it that you do that can help them?
We provide rehabilitation services both for mental health and for physical health for firefighters and for their families as well. In situations such as this, these events tend to stay with firefighters having gone through the whole situation that they're dealing with at the moment. And sometimes that has a negative effect both on their physical and on their mental health.
Yeah.
Well, so we provide rehab services to help them through those situations.
And how is it that they're... Because, you know, we were talking to Alan, the firefighter, earlier about the incredible training that they go through to deal with situations such as this. But you can't... Every situation's different. This one is particularly horrific, of course. You can't train for how that's going to affect you, can you, really?
No, you can't. But there is a way of developing your own personal resilience to certain circumstances. But also to recognise that some of the things that you see in these kind of incidents, actually it is quite normal to be affected by them. And it's how you rationalise that being affected, if you like, to try and normalise in a sort of working situation. Some of the work that we do on an individual basis, but we also do some group work. You might remember the air crash that happened in the West Sussex a couple of years ago.
Yes, at the air show, yes.
At the air show, we did some work. We opened one of our centres and did some work with the firefighters who were involved there, just in bringing them together, building on the critical incident debriefing that they do in their own services, but bringing them together because they were all at the same incident and helping them through.
Yeah, and it's about helping each other as well, isn't it? And also,
it is,
anything, you know, firefighting, you know, this sounds terribly glib, but it's, you know, it's kind of seen as a, and I know there are many firefighters who are women, but it seems like a sort of, it's a macho kind of environment, I suppose. It's got that sort of feeling for people who do it. It's, you know, people don't want to necessarily show their feelings, but it's important in this sort of situation.
It is very important to normalise the fact that, you know, we are all human beings. Some of the things that they see in these kind of events should affect them, because that's part of being a human being. But it's how you come to terms with that, how you don't let it impact negatively on your working life or on your family life.
I was just going to say, in terms of those psychological effects, though, I mean, what are they? What are the what can happen to firefighters in been through this?
Some people have things like flashbacks from events that have actually gone on. Sometimes it's not even, it's a lot more subtle than that, and it's just the whole incident remains with them, and then it's built upon with other incidents that they've been to. And so over a period of time, stress, anxiety, depression can develop, symptoms associated with traumatic incidents, but perhaps even leading to diagnosis of PTSD.
Yeah, and when you sort of reach out to the firefighter, or is it that way around? Do they come to you, or do you go to them first? How does it work?
It's a little bit of both. They come to us, they refer themselves to us, but we do a lot of work to promote our services, to let them know that we are there, and we are there to support them and their families.
Right, all right. Listen, thanks so much for talking to us. Dr. Jill Tolfrey there, Chief Executive of the Firefighters Charity, which helps firefighters dealing with situations like this in the aftermath. Because at the end of the day, you and I cannot sit here and imagine for 1 second what it's like to go into a burning building, risking your own safety in order to save people's lives. And you don't know what you're going to find in there either. You know, there'll be some horrific things for them to find in there, as we know, without going into too much detail on it. But how do you deal with that? And I think that's quite interesting and good that there's a charity there doing good work to help these people through it. Because they do a good job, as we learned earlier from talking to Alan Daly, who is a firefighter, who's talking us through, you know, just some of the pressures that they're under. We're going to take traffic and travel. We're going to take a break. Then we're going to come back and continue this coverage. The flames are still at the top of the Grenfell Tower. We learn that firefighters have gone beyond the 20th and 22nd floor now, nearly up to the top where they are fighting the fire as they go. Six people killed in that tower block fire, 74 in hospital, many still unaccounted for. Let me give you that emergency number again in case you are worried about friends or relatives. 0800 0961 233. 0800 0961 233. You're listening to Talk Radio in the afternoons. I'm John Holmes.
Across the UK, online and on DAB.
A new kind of talk radio. We'll get you talking.
This week at TradePoint, when you spend, you save. Spend £50 and we'll give you a £5 off voucher. Or spend £100 and you get a £10 off voucher to spend on your next purchase. Offer ends 18th of June. Vouchers redeemable 19th of June to the 2nd of July. See in-store for more details. Trade only.
TradePoint. At Honda, we've put a lot of our best thinking into the Jazz. So when it scored over 9 out of 10 on review for quality, practicality and features, we took it as a challenge. How to improve on what we think is the best small car money can buy? How about making it the best small car that slightly less money can buy? Until June 30th, you can own the Jazz for £199 a month with a £199 deposit and 4 years 0% APR. If you give that idea full marks, visit honda.co.uk/jazz199 for details. Terms and conditions apply. Final payment £4,403.07.
This August, Macmillan Cancer Support needs you to brave the shave and help raise money for men, women and children with cancer.
I'm braving the shave for my mum to let her know I'm here for her.
I'm shaving my head to support people facing cancer.
I'm braving the shave in memory of my grandma. I think she'd be proud of me.
I'm shaving my head to support my brother.
Whatever your reason for braving the shave this summer, you'll be doing something truly amazing to support people affected by cancer. So go on, sign up today at bravetheshave.org.uk or search Brave the Shave.
Direct Line guaranteed to be any public liability insurance quote for the same cover. Can your insurance do that? Search Direct Line Public Liability Insurance. New customers only. Qualifying criteria apply. Underwritten by UK Insurance Limited.
Stuck for Father's Day gift ideas? At B&Q, the Dremel Hobby Tool bundle with McAllister safety glasses and a pair of gloves is just £35. That's a saving of over £16. Hurry, offer ends Monday. So for great Father's Day deals, come to B&Q. Savings based on individual selling prices. Offer starts Friday 9th of June. See DIY.com for details.
Talk Radio Traffic and Travel.
The Westway in and out of London remains closed through Notting Hill after the major incident at Grenfell Tower in the early hours of this morning. The Hammersmith and City and Circle Line services in the area are also disrupted. There's still queues on the A14 between Cambridge and Godmanchester after earlier problems for both sides of the A14. The southbound M42 is looking heavy past an accident between junctions 2 and 1 near Redditch. A lane's closed there. And in Pembrokeshire, the A487 to the east of St David's is still closed through Croys Gough because of a vehicle fire. I'm Joanna Adams.
Hi, I'm Ryan Reynolds, and I'm going to demonstrate just how far around the home BT Infinity can reach in the next 20 seconds. Here goes. I can get Wi-Fi here in the kitchen. Back here in the bathroom. Oh, look at that. Out here in the garden. Even way up in the attic. You know what? Let's just take my word for it.
BT Infinity, the UK's most powerful Wi-Fi versus major broadband providers.
To verify, visit bt.com/smarthub.
John Holmes on Talk Radio. We'll get you talking.
Just coming up to 2:45 this afternoon. I am John Holmes. You are listening to Talk Radio. We are bringing you a different programme this afternoon. We're not doing what we normally do between 1 and 4. Instead, we are, and I think rightly, bringing you continued coverage of this London Tower block fire. 6 dead, 20 people currently in critical care, with 74 in total being in hospital, many still unaccounted for, of course. Let's talk to Gurpreet Anand. He's the trustee of the Central Gurdwara Sikh Temple, which is just 5 minutes from that scene. And you've been helping out, Gurpreet.
Yes, yes. We had people on the streets handing out water from 5 a.m. onwards when we realised what was happening. And even now, as I speak, we've just arranged a huge delivery of water, juices and other items to the Edward Woods Community Centre, which is behind our Gurdwara, which is acting as a distribution point where they're collecting clothes, sanitary items and food items.
We've been hearing a lot about the goodwill of people this afternoon, and it does take a situation like this for communities to come together in a way, doesn't it? It's just one of those, it's a tragedy, but people do forget their differences and kind of really do rally around when this kind of thing happens.
That's correct. Where pain and suffering don't choose faiths or religions or backgrounds, it comes to us all. So we all work together to come over that. This is humanity coming together. Mm. And it's been visible here. You know, you've had the local residents all coming together, people coming up from far away and just sending things down. I'm getting lots and lots of messages from within my community, the Sikh community, all wanting to help, all wanting to send things. So we're coordinating with the community centre here, which is behind the Gurdwara, and doing the best we can to get what is needed.
And just give us a sense. Sorry, Gurpreet. I was just going to say, just give us a sense, if you would, of the different communities in the area, because I think we're learning that the residents of the Tower are predominantly Muslim, but obviously you've got the Sikh community down there as well. You know, it is a multicultural area, isn't it?
Oh, it is. So in this area, we've got a mosque, we've got churches, we've got the Sikh Gurdwara, and they all really get on. They work well together. You'll find the various religious leaders from each place getting together, talking to each other. So the camaraderie has always been there. And, when this situation arose, everyone's just come out and doing what they can to help. And, we've got some really great communities and they're all delivering things. I've just seen a local Muslim girls' school delivering a van load of water and clothes and things. So everyone's coming together to help out.
And in terms of what, you were on the scene early, I know, and in terms of how you found out about it, and was it a case of seeing it for yourself? Did you hear about it on the news? What was the situation like 5 minutes away?
Yeah, I found out about it waking up and noticing one of my colleagues who is based at the temple doing a live feed on Facebook. And I just couldn't believe what I was seeing. And we quickly reached out to the various aid groups in the Sikh community. So we've got Ravi Singh from Khalsa Aid, who's more used to dealing with incidents in Syria and Iraq. He's involved in relief projects there.
Okay.
And but he's here down here helping out with us. He happened to be in London and it was great. He's got a lot more experience in aid relief than we have. For us, this is an unusual situation.
Yeah.
But what is amazing is everyone's stepping up to the mark. You know, it's a difficult time, but everyone's coming together and they're all working together fantastically. It's amazing sign. You know, we talk about the spirit of Londoners. My father came here in 1955. He used to talk about that. And it's here. It's always been here. It's been here since the time of the war. It's been here. It's still here now. And, you know, all the communities have come. They've adopted that spirit. And they're all working hard together.
And in terms of people you've been talking to yourself this morning and into the afternoon, I mean, what's the general feeling? We were hearing anger earlier from certain residents, from certain, you know, people who live in your community down there. Is that the sense that people have that this was even allowed to happen?
Yes, we've been detecting that from the people we've spoken to, that there is anger and resentment about how could this have been allowed to happen. Apparently some are saying complaints had been made to the council about fire hazards. I don't know the veracity of that. It's not something I'm involved in, but it is something I've picked up on while helping out down here.
And the current current situation, as you kind of see it from where you are 5 minutes away now, I mean, it's presumably still a hive of the emergency services. We know they're still in the building, still trying to put the fire out, for goodness sake. I mean, just give us a sense of what you can see at the moment or what you have been looking at.
So you've got the emergency services at work. There's not as many ambulances going by now, so I am hoping that means most of the people affected in that sense are out. But there's a lot of fire services here, police around, as would be expected, and they're all working together. One of the things that you mentioned is the block did have a large Muslim population, and they are fasting at the moment. So although we've brought relief down, lots of people are not taking it, and it's probably come 9 o'clock when they break their fast that a lot of the food and water would be needed at that point.
Yeah, okay. Listen, thanks so much for taking the time to talk to us. I know I'll let you get back to helping out down there. That's Gurpreet Anand, trustee of the Gurdwara down there, Sikh Temple, in that multicultural community. Alex Dibble is also down there for Talk Radio. He earlier was speaking to Esther, who lives in an apartment block adjacent to the tower.
Did you live in the tower block?
No, not the tower, next to it, Hertz Way.
And so, but you understand looking for accommodation this evening. Why is that? Because your block was affected?
Yeah, we got evacuated. We had to come out.
Oh,
the police got everyone out, yeah.
Okay, but you don't know where you'll be later on?
No, the housing will let us know. It could be here, or it could be in another place. It might be back in the flat, who knows? I don't think so.
And how's your son doing? I mean, this must be...
I think it's a shock to him, because he has special needs, so he's very anxious. And he hasn't slept. We both haven't slept since 3 o'clock in the morning. So I think it probably will hit him in a few days, actually. And he knows that we have friends in that tower block, because all he can say, I wonder if she got out. So, you know, so we don't know. And I said to her, well, hopefully he has, hopefully.
Is there a feeling that you have that obviously it's not an ideal situation for you, but at the same time, do you feel lucky that you weren't even worse off?
I haven't really thought about that. So, to me, yeah, it's not nice, not good, it's a shock. But what can I say? Yeah, I don't... I feel blessed then, but I just... It's not good, it's not nice, because that is me first time seeing real fire like that in a tower block. I've only really seen on TV. So when you actually, it's not a good feeling at all.
That's Esther. She lives in an adjacent block to Griffithnell Tower, which is, of course, you won't even have missed this news at all. It has been subject to this horrific event. Victoria is down. Victoria Bourne, of course, Talk Radio's Victoria Bourne is down on the scene as well. With live now. Hi, Victoria.
Hi, John.
Hi. So, okay, we spoke to Alex earlier and got a sense of what was going on. I know you've just got down there, but what's the current situation like?
Well, I'm just a few streets away from where Grenfell Tower is, and I'm looking at it now, and there's thick smoke still billowing out of it. And this is about 13 hours after the fire first broke out, and there's like, I want to say it's like an acrid smell in the air. You can really smell the smoke. It's like the debris from the building has come, and I don't know, maybe I'm a 5-minute walk away, yeah. And the debris has spread really far and wide.
When you say debris, I mean we've seen images of bits coming off the tower. Is this kind of like the cladding people are talking about? Is that what?
I don't know for sure. It looks a bit polystyrene-y, so it's like sections of black stuff. It looks almost like foamy, so I don't want to say it's the cladding, but it's spread far and wide. I've just been chatting to one of the people who's helped set up one of the community centres nearby. He's called Joe, and he got a frantic phone call within 40 minutes of this fire breaking out, yeah. And he just went straight down to the community centre, opened it up before 2 a.m, and he's just broken down in tears talking to me. He's saying, you know, these people, hundreds and hundreds of people, are now homeless because of this fire. And he said to me, I'm known for being really hard. I don't take no nonsense. And he's broken down in tears. People are really touched. And in that community centre, just a few streets away, it is full of supplies. There's clothes, there's water, there's food, and people are just turning up with whatever they can provide to try and help these people who've been left homeless.
It's interesting, we've just before we came to you, we spoke to Gurpreet Anand. He's from the Sikh temple down there, and what he was giving us was a sense of how the communities, because it's a very multicultural area, of course, down there,
yeah.
And how they're all coming together, and his words were, and I'll tell you what he said, pain and suffering have no religion. And it does, tragically, it does take something like this to that sense of people coming together, doesn't it? We see it after the terrorist attacks, we see it all the time. And is that the sense you're getting? Is that it's just, yeah. it's kind of the great leveler in a way?
Yeah, exactly. There's people from every different ethnicity in this area. And, you know, it's all quite calm at the moment. You can tell people are concerned about what's happening to the people who lived in that tower block. You know, it doesn't matter what your faith is or the colour of your skin. They just want to do what they can to help. And it's really touching because this fire has had catastrophic consequences for so many people.
Indeed. Look, Victoria, thank you very much indeed. Victoria's down there for Talk Radio this afternoon. We'll speak to her again later. Let's hear from Maggie Evans. Maggie Evans is organising a help effort. We've been talking about help efforts in this section of the programme. She was speaking to Sky News earlier.
We're so impressed and grateful. The community's come out in droves. And as you can see behind over here, we've got the most amazing amount of children's clothes has been the thing that people have wanted to bring. But at the moment, we don't have anybody here who needs them yet. But I'm sure later that's going to become a really important thing. And so we're cutting up fresh fruit. We're doing icy water. We're making sandwiches and making sure that the police and the traffic response knows that they can come here for lunch to recharge their phones, shelter and a quiet place out of the sun.
You're local, you're attached to the church, yes. You would have seen what unfolded. Did you expect such a response in such a short space of time?
I was amazed. I came down here on my bicycle from Kilburn and I just was thinking this church probably wouldn't be needed. And we opened the door and within 10 minutes we probably had 30 people all wanting to help. Everybody's so moved at the worry for the families that are affected.
And not only are they bringing in goods and supplies, they're giving up their time, they're volunteering to help.
And we've got a chef from the local restaurant. This gentleman, will you come and talk to us a second? He's come from Summerall and Bushett, the shop on the Clarendon Cross.
My name is Marcelo, I'm a chef, a local chef in here in the area.
And you're here to help?
To help with everything.
The response here has been amazing.
It's amazing. In 10, 20 minutes, we are overwhelmed with food, with water, with clothes for the kids. Yeah. I think it is amazing.
Maggie, if there's anything, I know you're turning people away now, if there's anything that you've identified that people actually
because
need.
Because it's Ramadan, people are fasting, so yeah. There's a very big delay in terms of the fact that we're trying to distribute food. But that doesn't necessarily... Marcello's going to make a big lunch, and we hope that the volunteers and the police and traffic people will come here to...
It's a little things, isn't it? I noticed a woman when I was nearer to Grenfell Tower, she was carrying a bag full of just baby toys. Yes. And some children who were sitting there who received teddy bears who were overwhelmed with emotion. Because they've lost everything.
Yeah. And so we really are aware that there are community centres probably closer to the cordons, which are being more proactive.
That's Maggie Evans organising a help effort. We've been hearing a lot about the help effort, saying this sweep of the programme, this quarter we spoke to Gurdeep down there at the Sikh temple. All communities coming together, Victoria as well reporting the same thing. Now, in the next hour of the programme, we're here till 4 o'clock, by the way, Sam Delaney's Drive Time programme will be actually coming live from down near Grenfell Tower for you as well this afternoon. They'll be talking to people who are actually eyewitnesses. We'll be bringing you, we're going to talk to a structural engineer in the next hour as well. I want to get hold of one because there's a lot of talk about whether this building collapses or not at the moment. We don't know that it's structurally safe, which makes the firefighters going in, of course, even braver, not knowing that that's gonna, it could happen at any time. Of course, they do their assessments, but you just don't know. But what happens if it does collapse? What happens if a building collapses? You know, everyone's mind will, of course, turn to the Twin Towers and what happened there on 9/11 and the devastation that those buildings collapsing caused. But they have to collapse somewhere, and that is a kind of built-up community down there. So what do you do? You presumably evacuate the surrounding area? We'll be finding out, among other things, in the next hour as we continue our coverage of the terrible events in London today, the Grenfell Tower fire. Robin will have the latest news, though, on Talk Radio after the adverts. I'm John Holmes. Talk Radio is what you're listening to.
Talk Radio.
Join the Talk Nation.
Pick up your phone and Talk Radio.
We'll get you talking.
Stand up to cancer on Talk Radio. Stand up, raise cash, take cancer out. Luckily, we're more equipped than ever to defy it. It's time to rise up against cancer.
Calling all rebels! Talk Radio have teamed up with Stand Up to Cancer, and together we're raising funds and raising the roof in a series of fearless challenges.
From a close shave with hair-raising results
to making serious dough from a ballsy bake-off.
Get inspired, join the rebellion, and help bring in stacks of cash for game-changing cancer treatments.
100% of the money raised go straight to those badass science boffins who save lives.
Stand Up to Cancer on Talk Radio. Rebels, you now have a cause. Search Stand Up to Cancer to sign up.
Imagine this. It's time to change your car. Someone offers to buy it. Great, but only if you buy your new car from them. Ugh. Which means you don't have the freedom to shop around for a better deal. Well, that's what happens when you trade your car in. So why not try selling to WeBuyAnyCar.com? Then you'll be a cash buyer, all footloose and fancy-free, off to try and get a better deal on your next car. Imagine that. Enter your reg number now at WeBuyAnyCar.com. Terms and conditions apply. See WeBuyAnyCar.com/info.
My thing, Guatemalan Cortado. As coffees go, it's pretty lively. Must have smashed out 24 spreadsheets in half an hour. Boom. Which is, funnily enough, what my laptop did when I spilt my Cortado all over it. Oh, no. So, I need a new one. 15-inch display, 1 terabyte hard drive, and no big price tag. Refurb it is.
Jake's thing. It's got to be a refurbished laptop from eBay. That's as good as new with 12-month seller warranty. Buy refurbished tech on eBay and save up to 50% versus new. eBay. Find your thing.
There are over 15,000 products in the new Screwfix catalogue. Surprising how easy it is to pick up, really. The new Screwfix catalogue, packed with tools, accessories, and loads of great trade deals. Pick up your free copy from any of our 520 stores nationwide.
Screwfix, here when you need us.
Across the UK, online and on DAB.
Talk Radio. For those about to talk, we salute you. Talk Radio.
Good afternoon. 2 minutes past 3 o'clock. I'm John Holmes. It's Talk Radio. Robin's got the latest news for you.
Thank you very much, John. Coming up, 6 dead as a fire rips through a London tower block.
In my 29 years of being a firefighter, I have never, ever seen anything of this scale.
And questions are being asked about how it took hold so quickly.
It should not be possible for a fire to develop in this way.
Talk Radio.
Parts of Grenfell Tower block in West London remain alight this afternoon after a huge fire ripped through it overnight. At least 6 people have been killed, but the death toll is expected to rise. Fire crews have been trying to get the flames under control since they were called out just before 1 o'clock this morning. London's fire commissioner is Danny Cotton.
The fire crews continue to work tirelessly to go into the premises, to extinguish the remaining fire and to search the premises. This is a completely unprecedented fire. In my 29 years in the London Fire Brigade, I have never seen a fire of this nature, and I have seen many high-rise fires.
The building is home to over 120 families spread over 24 floors, and the fire appears to have destroyed every level. Matt Rack from the Fire Brigades Union says he's never seen anything like it.
People would expect that in a building like this, a fire would normally be contained to the flat or room of origin. and firefighters would be able to go in and tackle the fire in the flat. That's the expectation, that's how buildings are constructed, and that's how the fire service would normally operate.
Now, it's not yet known what caused the blaze, but it's emerged some people living in the building had previously raised concerns about a fire risk. David Collins used to be part of the Grenfell Tower Residents Association for the building.
In the 2.5 years I was there, there was never an evacuation test. One of the new boilers tripped out the beginning of last year, and we lost power to the building. And half of the emergency stairwell was not lit, so the emergency lighting did not work on half of the stairwell.
We'll, of course, be keeping you up to date throughout today with the very latest developments here on Talk Radio. Some other news in brief. Bells rung out at Borough Market this morning as it opened for the first time since the London Bridge terror attack. A minute's silence was held for the 8 people killed 11 days ago. And a senior US congressman has been shot dead at a baseball practice in Northern Virginia. Officials say Steve Scalise is in a stable condition after it happened in Alexandria this morning.
Talk Radio National Weather.
It's going to be warm and sunny, highs of 28.
Thank you very much indeed, Robin. And now here's Tim with the sport.
England are up against
Talk Radio Sports Update.
England are up against it in the Champions Trophy semi-final with Pakistan at Cardiff. England were all out for 211 with one ball left of their 50 overs a few minutes ago. Pakistan were 29 without loss in the sixth over. Chelsea will begin their Premier League title defence with a home game against Burnley. The new season's fixtures have been announced and two of the newly promoted sides start at home against potential trophy contenders. Newcastle open against Tottenham at St James's Park, while Brighton's first top flight game in 34 years is against Manchester City. Huddersfield head to Crystal Palace for their first elite division match since 1972. Sweden international defender Victor Lindelof is close to completing his move from Manchester United to Manchester United from Benfica. He's at the club's Carrington training ground where he's expected to have a medical. And it's understood that Leicester are close to agreeing a deal with Hull for defender Harry Maguire. It's thought he could move to the former Premier League champions for around £17 million. Maguire made 36 appearances in all competitions for Hull last season. That's the latest sport, powered by Talk Sport.
Talk Radio. John Holmes on Talk Radio. We'll get you talking.
3:05. We are with you through till 4 o'clock, of course, bringing you continued coverage of the continuing fire in Grenfell House in London. And Sam Delaney is going to be with you from 4 o'clock on Drive with his show coming from Grenfell Tower, the vicinity of Grenfell Tower anyway, itself. Now, what do we know so far? We know that there are 6 fatalities. That number is, I think, very sadly expected to rise. At the height of the fire itself, fire crews were not able to get past even the 12th floor, which is only halfway up this 24-storey building, of course. The firefighters, there have been some minor injuries to the firefighters, nothing serious though, but, I mean, you'd expect there to be some in a situation such as that. Crews are still down there. Forensic teams are now on site. But there's still much speculation as to how on earth a fire like this went through a building which theoretically should be designed to stop the spread of fire. We were talking earlier to David Amos, MP, Sir David Amos, who of course is the chair of the All-Party Parliamentary Committee on Fire Safety, which was set up after the 2009 fire in Southwark, in which people died as well. It seems that the regulations that they proposed haven't been implemented. The report... that report was given to Gavin Barwell, who was the then housing minister. He isn't anymore post-election. He's Theresa May's chief of staff. I think questions are going to be asked of him, though, as to why that why those things weren't implemented. But let's talk a little bit more about the evacuation techniques. What does happen? What should buildings have? What about fire legislation? Jim Creek is on the telephone. Hello, Jim.
Good afternoon, John.
Good afternoon. So you're the editor of the online magazine Means of Escape. So once again, and I say this about many of our guests, but that's the point of having you on, is you know what you're talking about. And that's why you're here. Why has this happened? What on earth has led to this, given legislation as it should be?
Well, from my perspective, let me just say that something catastrophic has failed in this particular situation. I totally agree with Colin Todd for once that these things are designed not to happen. As far as the legislation is concerned, and I'm sure as far as this particular block, there will be people looking for assurances from suppliers for certificates of conformity for those things that theoretically should have worked and didn't work in respect to this particular incident. One of the things that really does concern me, because we've spent the last 2 years being a real advocate for what is classified as the stay put strategy, where tenants in these buildings have been advised to stay inside their flat because the building is constructed in a manner that should effectively mean that only the flat of incidents should be compromised. So again, something terribly wrong has taken place in this particular case. Now, it's pure speculation to actually try to establish at this stage exactly what has gone wrong.
But I guess it can only be a number of things in this scenario. I mean, you know, there are specifics that can that could have gone wrong. I mean, it can't be a wide playing field, really, can it? It's got to be, you know, it's a fault with the materials. It's a fault with the legislation not being implemented. It's a fault with somebody issuing a certificate to something they shouldn't have done. You know, it's one of those things at the end of the day.
Well, I would imagine that at the end of the day, it's going to be a combination. In Lackanow House, for instance,
this is the Southwark fire in 2009.
In the Southwark fire, yes, some of the tenants had made alterations within their own domestic dwellings that had exacerbated the travel of smoke and flames.
So, when you say alteration, in what sense is that taking doors away?
Construction alterations within their own flats that had exacerbated the travel of smoke and the fire.
Okay, so that's like taking fire doors off or something, is that?
Yeah, taking just a lobby door off or a wall down,
right,
to make open plan. And in certain circumstances, they made alterations to the venting system.
Right.
So,
but we should say at that point, though, that Southwark Council did plead guilty to not upholding the regulations in that particular case.
Yes, but and again, I think that there was a lost opportunity there because no individual was held culpable, which is obviously an opportunity under the legislation. And it was only, obviously, fining the local tenants themselves, because the fine was picked up by Southwark Council.
Yeah.
And to be perfectly honest, it didn't get that much coverage.
No, but led to what's interesting about it is it led to this committee, this parliamentary committee, who looked at that and essentially said, you know, this should not happen. Such legislation is already in place to say this can't happen. So the case of what went wrong here. You know, is it a case that people didn't necessarily have the means of escape? Were the fire escapes in the right place? Where does a fire escape have to be? You know, because we hear about this being in the centre of the building, we hear about fire escapes at the edge of the building. I mean, what is the legislation in place for that kind of thing, Jim?
Well, I feel, again, we're actually erring on talking about this specifically because I don't know where the fatalities have been found or anything, so I can't really comment on that situation. But where I do have a dilemma, when I watched the development of the fire, that obviously some people did stay put in their flat when quite obviously they were going to be in danger as the fire developed.
That is interesting that you say that, because you've probably seen this, but certainly on social media today, and again, I've got no way of corroborating this is true, but somebody posted a picture of the safety card that you get, you know, in buildings. All buildings have these. Fire action, Grenfell Tower. First sentence on this official looking, you know, it's got all the thing about fire exits and closing doors. First sentence is, there is a stay put policy for residents in Grenfell Tower.
Exactly.
Mm.
And that's published by London Fire and Rescue as well.
Yeah.
And that has been part of the major publicity. Now, all of these things will come out in the examination, as they did in Lackanow and as they did in Shirley Towers prior to that in Southampton, where the loss of two firefighters led to some legislation that was implemented.
Yeah.
Specifically to make sure firefighters didn't get tangled up in fire alarms. one of the basis of the legislation that will now become examined is that, and obviously is about the law is only an objective. The objective is that there shall be no loss of life or injury. But there's nothing really other than building regulations that are prescriptive. And it is up to the risk assessor and how competent the risk assessor is in determining fire safety arrangements for any individual premises.
I see.
So one of the things that, the Means of Escape magazine is all about is about the management of fire safety on an ongoing basis and the maintenance of systems, and more than anything else, the inspection and enforcement side of things, the audit of those arrangements that should be taken holistically rather than independently.
Yeah.
Where I would obviously be slightly different than Sir David Ennis is that whilst sprinklers would be a knee-jerk type reaction, and I'm not going to say they're not extremely effective, but when you've got a system that you're going to put in that really, really requires the absolute prime maintenance regime, I have to question whether social housing is the sort of environment
going to be maintained. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, and is that down to...
I've already seen that the dry risers in London are a cause for concern.
In what sense? Does it all come down to money again? Is it a resource question? We've been asking this afternoon as well, and people have had sort of very different answers to this, but is it down to that? Is it down to ineptitude of a council just not doing their job properly, or is it down to that council is going to turn around and go, well, we haven't got the money to do that, even though, of course, we're talking about human lives, cost should be no object.
But there are management ways where we can still achieve that objective. But obviously, budget and budgetary concerns are evidently have got to be a factor.
Yeah.
But I would also say that within the procurement process, there is a lot to be desired, because we are going to base common denominators when choosing equipment, because it's, on some occasions, the cheapest tender wins where effectively it's not the best solution.
Well, we'll find out in the ensuing investigation, I'm sure. Final point, Jim, in terms of evacuation. Now, we hear about people being evacuated, but there appeared to be, as far as we know so far, no real regimented way of doing it. A former resident of the tower who was part of this action group we've been hearing about this afternoon, so we heard him earlier, he was saying that there weren't regular evacuation rehearsals in this case. Is that an important part of it as well? All residents kind of have to know their way out and what to do in an event such as this. But
I think that really comes into a very good topic for discussion in terms of how it could be. It's fantastic when your program this afternoon shows the social interaction of this tragedy. And if we could get the same social responsibility around, a combined efforts around evacuation and discussing the issues, discussing why things shouldn't be smashed, like the emergency lighting being smashed on staircases,
yeah.
Social housing. I think that that's a huge subject to develop in terms of social responsibility. And the same, believe it or not, goes for the school environments as well. Because these things are effectively something that I've campaigned a long time for. It's about telling people the truth, telling people the holistic approach.
So is it a fault of social housing? I mean, are you laying some of the blame there at the way social housing is managed, or are you sort of saying, well, you know, people in social housing may not have the same commitment to safety as others?
Well, let's say that my experience is that unfortunately, where you get a mixed tenancy, then you do get a particular sections of the population that seem to be working against one another, and it takes a tragedy like this for everybody to come together.
Yeah. All right. Listen, we've got run out of time there, but Jim, thank you very much. That's Jim Creek, editor of online magazine Means of Escape, who raises an interesting point there. You know, and we haven't really talked about that. Maybe we should in the next part of the program. The social housing aspect of this. Now, in terms of the management of it, in terms of the people who live there, you know, are they looking out for each other? What are those communities like? We'll also hear from a man after the travel who lived in the tower, and we were talking about evacuation there and had to evacuate. So we'll get some details from him after the traffic and travel and the ads. You're listening to Talk Radio in the afternoons. We're bringing you coverage of that tragic fire in London in Grenfell Tower near Latimer Road. And we'll continue that coverage until Sam Delaney at four, who's coming live down from the scene. I'm John Holmes, Talk Radio in the afternoon.
Talk Radio, digital debate for the UK.
Pick up your phone and Talk Radio.
We'll get you talking.
Stuck for Father's Day gift ideas? At B&Q, the Dremel Hobby Tool Bundle with McAllister safety glasses and a pair of gloves is just £35. That's a saving of over £16. Hurry, offer ends Monday. So for great Father's Day deals, come to B&Q. Savings based on individual selling prices. Offer starts Friday 9th of June. See DIY.com for details.
You have one new message. No message left.
Sound familiar? It's not the sound of silence. It's the sound of your customers not being able to get in touch. So take back control with eReceptionist. eReceptionist answers and directs all your calls, ensuring your customers always get an answer and you always get the business. Take a free 30-day trial at ereceptionist.co.uk. Free trial must be cancelled within 30 days to avoid charges.
American Golf's Father's Day deals are on. Hundreds of gifts from just £4.99. A pack of Callaway Super Soft balls, only £19.99. £10 off men's Callaway polo shirts. And £30 off the Garmin Approach S20 GPS watch. In-store or online at americangolf.co.uk.
Tradesmen, here's the plan. Get to the rendezvous. Your contact the foreman will show you the ropes and the tools. Get in, do your job, and get out. You'll be sipping margaritas on the beach before you know it. But first, prove you're a guy they can trust. Show them your direct line public liability policy, which has been conveniently wired to your phone. And tell them you're with the Wolf. Let's get to work.
Get instant confirmation of your cover sent straight to your smartphone. Can your insurance do that? Search Direct Line Public Liability Insurance. Valid email address required. Underwritten by UK Insurance Limited.
There are over 15,000 products in the new Screwfix catalogue. Surprising how easy it is to pick up, really. The new Screwfix catalogue. Packed with tools, accessories and loads of great trade deals. Pick up your free copy from any of our 520 stores nationwide.
Screwfix. Here when you need us.
Talk Radio, traffic and travel.
In Lincolnshire, the M180 westbound has the entry slip road closed. Heavy traffic there due to an overturned lorry and a shed load of wood. That's at Junction 5. In the West Midlands, we have one lane closed in queuing traffic. That is due to an accident on the M42. That's southbound between Junction 4 and Junction 3A. In Worcestershire, we have one lane closed in queuing traffic. That's due to an accident on the M42 southbound. That's between Junction 2 and Junction 1. And elsewhere in Worcestershire, one lane closed due to a broken down vehicle. That's on the M5 southbound between Junction 5 and Junction 6. I'm Sammy Jolo.
Hi, I'm Ryan Reynolds, and I'm going to demonstrate just how far around the home BT Infinity can reach in the next 20 seconds. Here goes. I can get Wi-Fi here in the kitchen. Back here in the bathroom. Oh, look at that. Out here in the garden. Even way up in the attic. You know what? Let's just take my word for it.
BT Infinity, the UK's most powerful Wi-Fi versus major broadband providers.
To verify, visit bt.com/smarthub.
Talk Radio. Talk and entertainment across the nation.
Talk Radio.
Give it some lip. Across the UK, online and on DAB.
John Holmes on Talk Radio. We'll get you talking.
It's Talk Radio in the afternoons, 22 minutes past 3 o'clock. We're bringing you continued coverage of the London Tower block fire. We know of 6 fatalities so far, 74 patients being treated in hospital with 20 critical. There are still many people unaccounted for, I'm sorry to say. But let's hear from a man called Michael, who lives in Grenfell Tower and had to evacuate. Now, he was talking to Talk Radio's Alex Dibble earlier, and we were talking about evacuation, so I thought this was a good time to play his account of what happened with him.
Well, I was in bed about half one with my girlfriend. She was asleep. Our little girl was asleep next door.
I was dozing in and out, sleeping this, and then I smelled a funny smell of plasticky, and I know we've got Kindles and iPads in the house, so I jumped up in case one of them had malfunctioned, checked everything. No, everything was okay, but I could still smell the smell. I've gone in the kitchen, I've opened the window to have a cigarette because I was awake now, and I heard shouting and screaming, and I heard someone going, "It's getting bigger, it's getting bigger." So I thought, something's up here. So I've gone to the front door, looked through the spy hole, and I just see smoke everywhere. I opened the door, I heard all the commotion, and I was just in my boxers. So I ran back indoors, put my dressing gown on, grabbed the little one, grabbed me bird, put the little one under my dressing gown from the smoke, and then ran out. We were on the 7th, we had to go down past the floor that was on fire, and that was just thick black. Then we got out, and when I looked up, it was like the whole block was on fire.
My goodness, and what was going through your mind as you were running out?
Oh, just get out, you know, make sure they're safe, cover the girl up with them for the inhalation, you know, I mean, that's the biggest killer.
Do you say you had a child?
Yeah, I had this child, the 6-year-old in my arms, I had to get her out of bed.
My goodness, and she's safe?
Yeah, she's safe, thank God.
Wow. No. And what were other people doing as you were running out of the building?
Well, I have residents, yeah. They were running out as well. Running out as well, or there were some that was actually going back to their flats because they were told to go back in. This is what I found out just now when I've come out. I spoke to a couple of people and they go, "No, the fire brigade were telling us to get back in our houses. Some did and some didn't."
And so you obviously came out. You're still alive, but yeah. You know, have you heard about anyone who's still in there?
Well, yeah, there's missing people reports. There was a woman that lived on the 21st floor. She came running down with her 6 kids. When she got to the bottom, there was only 4 of them there, and they can't find them. They're 2 girls now. Another woman I just spoke to, her uncle was on the 26th floor. They can't get hold of him. There's got to be untold catastrophe deaths here. You know what I mean? There's got to be untold. It was so powerful. It was aggressive, the fire. It was just, you know, it weren't calming down even when they were spraying water on it. It was just going up and up and up.
How many people lived in that block?
A couple of hundred people at least. A couple of hundred people at least. What, there's 26, 27 floors, and there's 6 flats on each floor, from 1 bedrooms to 4 bedrooms.
And so what are you feeling right now?
Just in shock, but happy to be alive. And happy that the girls are okay. All the stuff can be replaced, you know, we can't. So, but it's going to be a long road now. We had to get emergency accommodation, start from scratch, clothes, you know.
And are you one of the people who had fears that this kind of thing would happen?
Well, I mean, I never really had a fear about it, but there was things going about it. They wanted us to sign a petition so they could have a 24-hour concierge in there because there was trouble in the block or something like that. But there weren't too much talk about the fire, except when they said, I did hear before the fire, if there is any fire in the block, you must stay in your flat and put a wet towel underneath the door, and then you'll be rescued within an hour. It's got an hour of resistance, but the heat was far too intense to stay for 10 minutes, let alone an hour. You know, I mean, I could feel the heat on my floor, and it was 3 floors above.
I've already heard that there's only one way out of the building. Is that true?
Yeah, there's only one fire escape, one stairwell. And then I've heard just now that caught a light as well later on.
My goodness.
Yeah, it's horrific. But I'm dreading to see the fatality numbers, you know. It's how many people have led their lives have been destroyed.
You think it could be quite a few?
Yeah, I think so. And the time of the night, people asleep, working Monday, so it's now getting ready to work Tuesday, all the kip. And as I said, the fire alarm, it was useless. It wouldn't have woke anyone up. If I was in my normal sleep, it wouldn't have woke me up.
That's Michael, lives in the tower, or lived, should we say, in the town, had to evacuate there, talking about grabbing his bird and running downstairs. We think he's referring to his wife rather than a parrot or something. Victoria Bourne is down there. She's down there for us. She's down there for Talk Radio. Victoria, you there?
I am, John, yes.
Okay, so I understand you've been talking to people as well.
I have. So I've just been speaking to a lady called Nez. She lives in a building nearby. And she realised that the fire had broken out shortly afterwards. So we know that it broke out just before 1 a.m. So she's not slept since then. She's got a relative who lives in there. She knows a family who live further up. And she broke down in tears talking to me because she said of the family, the mother is in one hospital, her son is in another hospital, and the father is unaccounted for. They don't know where he is. He's missing. And I think, you know, people are fearing the worst. They haven't heard from people they care about. And we know that there have been a certain amount of people confirmed dead, but we're being warned to prepare for the worst, and that number will go up as the rescue operation continues. They're going to be there for another 24 hours or so. And I'm looking at the building now. I'm right outside the police cordon, and it's smouldering away, and it looks almost like a shell of its former self.
I think we've got some audio that you've recorded, Victoria.
That's right, yeah. So this is Joe Walsh, and when he found out that the fire had broken out on the tower, he opened up his a community centre he runs in the early hours to so people have somewhere to go to, and they've been collecting supplies ever since. And he's just shocked and been trying to do everything he can to help.
It was disgusting. It was, you know, you're standing there watching people scream. It's more upsetting. You can't do nothing. All right, come down and open the club for them, but other than that, what can you do? You can't get to them, and they're still screaming 3 hours on. So.
And why did you feel it was so important that to open up the centre and get people to rally around and help?
Because they got nothing. I can go home. I can go to my bed. I've still got my furniture in my flat. These people have got nothing now. You've seen it, so they've got nothing. And, you know, it's just their local community. We're all local. So it was just the only way we could help. But you just still feel useless. And that's it, really.
It's amazing that you've been able to do as much as you can. Thank you very much.
Well, we couldn't. We could only do it with the local help of the local people. And they're coming from every area. So, you know, it's... we're just providing a base. They're the ones that are doing it.
There we go. That's Victoria Bourne. She's down there. I was talking to Joe, a local resident, earlier. Theresa May has commented. Of course, she has said she's deeply saddened by the events at Grenfell Tower, and also said that she's going to form a cross-government meeting, or have a cross-government meeting, to discuss this. But, of course, earlier we were talking to David Amos MP, Sir David Amos, who is indeed the chair of one of those such committees that was convened after the tragic 2009 fire, where people died in a tower block in Southwark, who made, as we were hearing on this programme earlier, recommendations which weren't followed by, you know, theoretically, as we're learning now, Theresa May's own housing minister, who is now her chief of staff. So questions are going to be asked, and we'll just have to wait and see what answers we're going to get. We bring you continued coverage of the events that have been unfolding around this terrible fire in London. In the next half an hour, we will continue to do so. I want to know as well, I want to talk to somebody about this trolling that goes on. It happens very quickly in this day and age of social media, of course, where people post pictures of people they say that are missing on social media in tragic circumstances, terrorist attacks, fires like this. It happened almost instantly with the fire was announced. People started doing this. It's all made up. It's like, why do people do it? So we're going to be talking to a psychologist about that as well in the next half an hour. Don't forget, Sam Delaney Drive will be coming live from nearby Grenfell Tower as well. They'll be grabbing people to talk to, eyewitnesses and so forth, after 4 o'clock, keeping you up to date. Keeping you right up to date now, though, just after 3:30. Robin's here with the latest.
Talk Radio.
Thank you very much, John. The Grenfell Tower block remains alight over 12 hours after fire ripped through its 24 floors last night. Six people have been killed, over 70 are injured. Joe Walsh runs the Maxilla Social Club nearby.
It was like lighting fuse paper. It just went up, straight up the cladding. And as it was going past each floor, it was setting each window alight.
The building is home to over 120 families over those 24 floors, and the fire appears to have destroyed every single level. Matt Rack from the Fire Brigades Union says he's never seen anything like it.
Tower blocks like this, firefighters would normally expect to fight a fire from within the building. They would expect to find a safe fire escape to dry rising mains and so on, other engineered structures to allow firefighters to tackle a fire in a flat in a building like this, and clearly that hasn't happened on this occasion.
Structural engineers are on site monitoring the building, which is now a shell, amid fears it could collapse, but at the moment it remains standing. A fatal blaze at a tower block in South London back in 2009 did lead to a series of recommendations about fire safety in high-rise buildings, but the Labour MP Harriet Harman says nothing was done.
After the Lackenall House fire, we knew what went wrong. We knew
how to stop it again. We knew that it actually would cost money, but it needed to be done. And I'm afraid the government just refused to do what was necessary.
Of course, this story is going to develop throughout today and into this evening. We will keep you up to date with the very latest here on Talk Radio. For your weather, very warm and sunny across England and Wales, cloudier and breezy for Western Scotland and Northern Ireland. Highs are 28.
Thank you very much, Robin. It is Talk Radio. Robin is absolutely right. Coverage will be continuing into the evening as this dramatic and terrible story continues to develop. Talk Radio in the afternoons. I'm John Holmes.
Delaney, live at Drive on Talk Radio. We'll get you talking. It's an A to Z of original afternoon entertainment with the most well-connected man in radio.
Give it some lip.
Big opinions, massive guests, all the top stories. Original afternoon entertainment with me, Sam Delaney.
Delaney, live at Drive.
Honk if you're Delaney.
This afternoon from 4.
On Talk Radio, we'll get you talking. John Holmes on Talk Radio. We'll get you talking.
Sam Delaney with you from 4. Yes, and he will be coming live from the scene and talking to eyewitnesses down there and indeed the community who have rallied round, as we've been hearing this afternoon, to help those in desperate need, given that everything they own has gone up in flames. Professor Roger Plank, let's talk to him. He's a structural engineer. We've just been talking about structural engineers on site, Roger. What will they be doing? What will they be assessing now?
Well, I think at this stage, John, they will simply be trying to establish in the broadest possible terms whether there is any danger of immediate structural collapse. They won't be able to determine that and the extent of the damage, obviously, until they can get into the building and do a much more detailed study.
Yeah.
I think at this stage it will be a sort of precaution, and if there is any imminent sign of potential collapse, then I'm sure they would evacuate and just create a safe zone around the building.
And for people like me who know literally nothing about structural engineering, how on earth do you stand outside a building, assuming that's where they are, as you say, at the moment, and look at it and determine how close to collapse it may or may not be?
Well, modern buildings, and I know this was built in the 1970s, but yeah, would still be built to a pretty high standard of fire resistance.
It would seem not. I mean, that's partly the issue, I suppose, here.
Well, I mean, we're talking about structure here. We're not talking about the rest of the building fabric, the cladding, the contents, and so on.
So this is the structure being what holds it up, essentially, yeah.
Yeah, what holds it up.
Yeah.
And that, because of the consequences of failure, is so important. The structure is protected to a very significant degree. So just in terms of detailing, in terms of applied finishes and so on, it's all designed in such a way that the likelihood of structural collapse in the event of even a pretty severe building fire is very remote. So really, one would not expect, even in a fire as bad as this one has been, that the structure would be significantly compromised and that there would be any risk of collapse. Having said that, as I say, you wouldn't be able to determine the details until you can get inside the building and do a much more close-up study.
And we learn of this recent refurbishment as well. Of course, we were talking about this. So this is, as you say, the tower was built in the 70s, but a two-year, £10 million refurbishment, which is part of a whole wider transformation of that estate that it's on, was completed only last year by a company, Ride-On Construction. They have said that their work met all required building control, fire regulation and health and safety standards. And the answer to that is, well, of course it did. You can't possibly refurbish a building without adhering to all of that and somebody signing it off, can you?
No, indeed. That's true.
So could that refurbishment, and I know it's speculation, Roger, but it's all we really have at the moment, of course, you know, in terms of refurbishing a building like that, and we're hearing a lot about cladding, I know, but what do you know? How can building safety be altered when really it should be being made safer, shouldn't it?
It should indeed, yeah. I think that we literally don't know, and I think that that's one where there are going to be a lot of questions asked during the review once the fire is not only under control. Hmm. Safe to go into the building and study this, there will be a very detailed inspection and analysis of what went wrong here. And that may well change future legislation. That has been the history of building safety developments over centuries, that sometimes we get it wrong and we have to change legislation accordingly. Now, I'm not suggesting that that is the case here, but it may be. We just don't know.
No, legislation, it's interesting you bring that up. We've been talking a lot about that this afternoon, and the fact that there is an all-party parliamentary committee for fire safety dealing with exactly this that was set up. Sir David Amiss MP is the chair. He was talking to us. He was saying that they put new legislation in place, but it simply hasn't been followed. And I found that incredible, to think that the legislation that could save lives is there. And we're talking, so many years later. That was 2009. But it's not followed. And I would have assumed it sort of had to be, but apparently not, Roger.
Well, I think that if it's actually embodied in law, then it probably does need to be followed. And I'm a bit puzzled by that statement. Certainly, building control, the whole process of getting approvals to do new building and to change buildings goes through a pretty rigorous process of assessment and to demonstrate the need for compliance with current legislation. I'm not really able to comment on that, but I'm surprised by it.
Yeah, well, we're hearing a lot. I mean, Harriet Harman has also said this afternoon that Harriet Harman of Labour, of course, has said that legislation simply wasn't followed. But let's talk a little bit more about the structure as well. In terms of the inside of a building like that, because, I would have assumed that fire doors, ways to contain fires, we've been hearing a lot, certainly internally, all designed within, but if the fire's on the outside, it's a different story.
Yeah, indeed, and that appears to have been the case here. From what I understand, the individual apartments had fire doors which were rated at 30 minutes, which the 30 minutes is a sort of slightly notional time, but it gives you a measure of the degree of resistance that that door will have to fire. But it's certainly from what I've read, that they are there is a degree of fire resistance to those doors, and I think this was why apparently the advice that was given to residents was to stay in place, because most building fires do develop internally. They're generally contained by the nature of the construction, so that individual floors in a multi-story building, for example, would be designed and detailed in such a way as to impede the spread of fire from one floor to another.
There's an interesting quote from a subcontractor here, speaking about fire doors as we are. This is someone called Vaughan Huggins, who said that he fitted fire doors at Grenfell Tower as a subcontractor back in 2012-2013, and they were inspected for doing it. It met all the regulations. But he said, while he was doing work in the block, he outlined some things that worried him. No fire breaks in service lines and pipes that run from floor to floor. He raised it and was told, and I'm quoting here, it was part of the ongoing work that would be dealt with. And this is back in 2012-2013. We don't, obviously, that's what he's telling us. He was there at the time that he fitted those doors, but fire breaks in service lines and pipes, is that a standard part of this?
Yeah, I mean, this is down to detailing, and again, it's all associated with how you make sure that fire doesn't spread through voids where services pass from one floor to another, so that there aren't effectively chimney effects.
Yes.
Through which the fire can spread. So it's very important that they are properly installed and indeed, to some degree managed. So the big buildings these days do require a sort of fire safety management approach as well.
Yeah, and just in terms of, you mentioned that the structural engineers on site will be assessing the building from the outside. When they get in, they'll have more of an idea.
Yep.
But if they do determine it is in danger of collapse, okay, and you say, obviously, you have to evacuate the surrounding area, how do you work out which way it's going to collapse, or can't you? Or are there indications, or do you have to evacuate, a massive area?
To evacuate an area which was safe, regardless of which direction the tower collapsed in.
But I would have thought they'd have done that already, because knowing that it could have collapsed at any time, as far as we knew.
As I said earlier, the nature of this building, as I understand, is reinforced concrete.
Yeah.
Very, very rare for a reinforced concrete structure to collapse. They can suffer damage in such a way, and this, there will no doubt have been some damage, but there is a sufficient degree of robustness in modern buildings.
Yeah, that's designed for people. I mean, so I'm sorry to
stand a fair degree of exceptional exposure to conditions like this.
Just on a final point, a lot of people have been talking and will continue to talk in terms of this collapse, of course, of 9/11 and the collapse of the Twin Towers. I realise that's a very different situation. But in terms, was that, as I recall, and correct me if I'm wrong, was that something to do with the high temperature that altered the structure of that building or something?
Well, that's what causes the problem for materials. All materials will lose strength when their temperature increases, concrete, steel, the same. And so by the time you get to temperatures of 1,000 degrees centigrade plus, and that's the temperature of the material, not the temperature of the fire, because that can happen very quickly.
Yeah.
So once the structure itself has reached that temperature, which can take quite a long time, that's why we have structural fire engineering design approaches which preclude that those temperatures from getting high very quickly.
I see.
Provided you've got that, then the building should be able to remain stable for the duration of a fire.
Right.
Fires will have a finite life. They'll reach a maximum temperature, but once the combustible material has been consumed, they'll naturally start to decay. So as long as you can make the structure survive for that long, then there should be no risk of collapse.
All right. Professor Roger Plank there, structural engineer from the Institution of Structural Engineers. Very, very interesting stuff in terms of what might happen next. Structural engineers are on site determining whether or not our building is in danger of collapse. Roger there suggesting that it would have been built to withstand that sort of fire. But then again, you'd expect it to be built to not have that happen to it at that speed. All questions still to be asked. We will be talking more, of course. We're bringing you live coverage of the aftermath and indeed the ongoing fire down at Grenfell House in London. Talk Radio in the afternoons. I'm John Holmes. We'll take traffic and travel.
Across the UK, online and on DAB.
We are Talk.
Talk Radio. Give it some lip.
Stand up to cancer on Talk Radio. Stand up, raise cash, take cancer out. Luckily, we're more equipped than ever to defy it. It's time to rise up against cancer.
Calling all rebels! Talk Radio have teamed up with Stand Up to Cancer, and together we're raising funds and raising the roof in a series of fearless challenges.
From a close shave with hair-raising results
to making serious dough from a ballsy bake-off.
Get inspired, join the rebellion, and help bring in stacks of cash for game-changing cancer treatments.
100% of the money raised go straight to those badass science boffins who save lives.
Stand Up to Cancer on Talk Radio. Rebels, you now have a cause. Search Stand Up to Cancer to sign up.
This June, if you test drive the Qashqai, Juke or X-Trail, Nissan will give you an extra £650 off. That's up to a massive £2,900 on a Qashqai at only 4.99% APR representative. Yes, Nissan will give you money off, just for test driving our best-selling crossover range. I know it sounds unlikely, but that's what it says here in this script. I haven't read it wrong. I'm a properly trained actor. I've done Shakespeare and telly and hundreds of voiceovers. Search Nissan offers if you don't believe me. Nissan. Innovation that excites. Nissan Finance. 4.99% APR representative. Offer excludes Vizia grade. Subject to status over 18s. Order and register before the 2nd of July from participating dealers only. T's and C's at nissan.co.uk.
We've got it at Selco. Selco, it's where the trade go.
At Selco Builders Warehouse, we've got real deals on a wide range of trade quality building products. In June, we've got cement mixer hired for only £14 ex-VAT for 7 days, insurance included. Now that's a real deal. See selcobw.com for even more real deals and to find your nearest branch.
We've got it at Selco. Selco, it's where the trade go.
Well, I wasn't really sure I'd belong in the army. Just thought they expected guys to be super strong. And before I joined, every press-up felt like 10. So on the second day, one of the lads offered to do some jobs for me for a few evenings so I can get some extra sessions in the gym. Yeah, so 10 years on, I'm our regiment's boxing champion, and that was all thanks to Jonesy. He didn't do much, but it meant a lot.
This is Belonging. Find where you belong. Search Army Jobs. Army.
be the best.
Talk Radio Traffic and Travel.
In Lincolnshire, the M180 westbound entry slip road is closed. Heavy traffic there, that is due to an overturned lorry and a shed load of wood, that's around Junction 5. Elsewhere in Worcestershire, we have one lane closed, that's due to a broken down vehicle. That's on the M42 southbound, that's between Junction 2 and Junction 1. Traffic there is coping well. And on the M25, we have stationary traffic that is due to a rolling roadblock and an accident, a lorry and car involved. That's clockwise between Junction 27 and Junction 28. I'm Sammy Jolo.
Hi, I'm Ryan Reynolds, and I'm going to demonstrate just how far around the home BT Infinity can reach in the next 20 seconds. Here goes. I can get Wi-Fi here in the kitchen. Back here in the bathroom. Oh, look at that. Out here in the garden. Even way up in the attic. You know what? Let's just take my word for it.
BT Infinity, the UK's most powerful Wi-Fi versus major broadband providers.
To verify, visit bt.com/smarthub.
Across the UK, online and on DAB.
John Holmes on Talk Radio. We'll get you talking.
OK, it's just coming up to 10 to 4. Sam Delaney with you with Drive here on Talk from 4 o'clock. Before that, though, let's take a slightly different angle. We're bringing you coverage of the ongoing fire at that London tower block, of course. But when something like this happens, a modern, I don't know what you'd call it, something, it's trolling. It's when you get people posting stuff on social media, pictures saying, in a tragedy, a terrorist attack or something like this, saying, my friend so-and-so is missing. Here's a picture of them and I can't get hold of them, anything else. And it turns out to be utter fake. It's just people making stuff up and chucking it on the internet. I don't know why, to try and join in with the tragedy. Let's talk to Dr. Arthur Cassidy, who knows what he's talking about. Here, yeah, social media psychologist and broadcaster. Hi, Dr. Arthur.
Good afternoon, John.
So we've talked about this a little bit before when we've had terror attacks, and it's not going away, is it? This is people doing. Why are they doing this?
Well, first of all, they do this because, first of all, they are anonymous. And because they are and continue to be anonymous online, this feeds the motivation that they have for gaining high emotional payoff. So whenever there is a grotesque and horrific tragedy, this is music to their ears, in inverted commas. So because of that, they seem to have three major personality deficits, or rather personality traits.
Yeah.
One is they tend to be, from research evidence, they tend to be psychopathological. They tend to have sociopathy, so they don't have any empathy with people. They seem to be very cold-hearted. And they seem to thrive almost, the more grotesque it is, because the more feedback they will get because of the anonymity and because they are not as inhibited as it would be if they were offline, then they continue to pursue this form of motivation.
So and they get out of it, what, just the satisfaction of knowing they're sort of, I don't know, chucking their trolling grenade into a situation. It's just a sort of personal satisfaction thing.
Yes, it is very much so, and they tend to work quite largely in groups. They become quite highly skilled at, for example, creating a more horrific and a more grotesque type of phenomena. For example, the more recent one is to, for example, take missing persons, which are in fact not missing. But to them, they know that this will heighten the emotionality of the event. Because it is a rare event, we don't often have something like this appearing on our screens. For example, London Bridge and Westminster Bridge. You know, any of these horrific tragedies bring out the trolls. And so what they want to do is to focus attention away from the tragedy to themselves. So their ego identity becomes very much increased by this. Their self-esteem becomes increased as they gain high status within their own particular group. They do remember these guys are quite highly skilled at this degree of abnormality, at carrying out abnormal behaviours online such as this. And so they will, it does actually raise their status online and within the group especially.
It makes me wonder what these people did before the internet happened, or certainly before social media. I mean, what were they doing in this kind of situation before? I mean, what, just shouting at their television or something? What you know, because this condition has long been there, I'm sure, but what outlet did they have before this very public one?
They do tend, because of the nature of trolling, we have some evidence more recent of those who have served a short prison sentence. They have been trolled, they have been caught, they've been imprisoned, they've served a short sentence. They see it as having no deterrent. But what they did before that, they do seem to work in terms of petty crime, burglaries, attacking people, assault, this type of thing, basically for their own self-gratification. But we have now learned from research experience that there are different types of trolls, especially European trolls, who don't have this particular pedigree. What they do, they tend to be much more computer savvy. These are the sort of guys who you might find being groomed into becoming a hacker online. So they become quite savvy at carrying out what we call pathological or very abnormal online assaults, simply because of the anonymity.
But overall, there's nothing we can do. This is just going to continue, isn't it, briefly?
Well, it's going to continue being realistic about it. However, some broadcaster did say to me recently that should we ban anonymity? Our instinct would say yes, but if we do ban it, it will certainly, these people can get beyond the ban. You know, they are very good, very savvy and highly intelligent guys. And they are across all forms of social classes. You know, we've had postgraduates doing this. We've had young goose children being able to do this. And it crosses so many different social classes, John. And so what we're finding now is that the more computer savvy they are, the more intelligent they are about the use of sophisticated networking, then the more likely they are to get gratification.
All right.
What I would say, by the way, is that because they have and persist in this type of motivation to get the self-gratification, we do need longer prison sentences for those who can be traced to their IP addresses and imprisoned. We have to put a stop to trolling. These people are suffering horrific injuries, death, and bereavement under the most tragic circumstances. And we have just seen this happening within weeks. London has suffered incredibly because of this.
Yeah.
And it's time government and legislators began to address this issue sensibly and intelligently by saying, enough is enough. Our Prime Minister has just reinforced that a few days ago. And we will stop these trolls. London must continue to serve the community the way they've done. And we need to appraise, certainly, all the emergency services, what the wonderful things they are doing. And by the way, John, I just mentioned this.
Final point, running out of time.
Yeah, they have also trolled security services in the past as well.
Okay.
So this is just how noble they are.
Dr. Arthur Cassidy, thank you very much. Just an insight there into the psychology of the kind of people who are posting these missing pictures of people who aren't missing on social media and sort of swamping it with this stuff, just trying to get an angle on what sort of makes them do it in a psychological sense. Let's go to Sam Delaney now. Normally he joins me in the studio around now, but he's actually not joining me in the studio because Drive is coming live from where, Sam Delaney?
We are in W10, just in the shadow of that horrific image of Grenfell Tower completely burnt out. We are in the Methodist Church just opposite, which is being used as a centre for people to come along and get food, get clothes, get furniture, get shelter, washing stuff. It's amazing, actually, to witness like a whole community out on this blazing hot day. This church and various other buildings all around this area are being used to sort of house and help those who have been burnt out of their home overnight.
We were talking earlier to Gurpreet Anand, trustee of the Gurdwara down there, the Sikh temple, and he was saying that, interesting how all religions, you know, all religious buildings have just come together on this, in that
multicultural. Yeah, the mosque, the church, and I tell you what, it's really interesting, right, and this sounds like I'm leaping on it to make a political point, but you can't help but notice, and I, this is my area, it's where I grew up in West London. I lived just around the corner from here for 10 years, and so I know a lot of people, I know this area well, and it is very multiracial, yeah. And you see out on the street every single type of person, everyone is helping out. It is a blitz spirit out here on the hot streets of Notting Hill today, and right in the middle of it, as I was strolling here towards the church, who did I see, and I don't know what she's doing here, but Katie Hopkins, in the middle of it all, having a conversation with a Muslim lady.
Of course she was.
And I sort of thought to myself, I wonder what Katie Hopkins makes of this, because she paints a picture of big metropolises like London being a terrible kind of dystopian image of failed multiculturalism. And, it couldn't be further from the truth what you're seeing here in Notting Hill today. So I'm sure she's feeling
well,
very
try
baffled.
And get her on. Try and get her on after 4 o'clock.
Yeah, we'd love to,
all
yeah.
Right, good.
So anyway, yeah, we'll bring you voices from various different people here in the community and beyond to sort of bring all the latest news and look at how this happened.
Thank you very much. Sam Delaney then with you live from W10 in London, as he said, after the latest updates, which are coming next from Robin after the ads, of course. You're listening to Talk Radio in the afternoons. I'm John Holmes. We're back tomorrow, 1 till 4. Stay safe.
Talk Radio. Dial up some dialogue.
Talk Radio. We'll get you talking.